Blog Talk Radio.
Now, this evening, we have another banger for y'all.
we have Michelle Norris with the GQ General Question. Then we have special guest appearance from one of the hottest pioneers in the building, Mike Destruction, letting us know what's been going on with him and his journey in the music industry. We will also be playing his soon-to-be-released, we will also be talking about his soon-to-be-released novel, Rapper's Delight, and congratulating him on being the newest member in the group Jazzy Five. Then we have Ruben Rice, one of the biggest producers from Baltimore, letting us know what's going on with him in the music industry, and we will be playing two of his tracks he produced from two of his artists. After Ruben, we have author K.L. Belvin in the building, talking about one of his novels that's sweeping the nation, From Gigolo to Jesus. So stay right there and don't move. We'll be right back with Michelle Norris and her GQ General Question. This is Rich Money. This is GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment.
It's butter, baby!
You're listening to The Sound.
Yourself before we get into your general question?
Yeah, I'm a mother of five kids and trying to hold it down
you know, just loving. That's it.
Okay. So let's get into it. What's your topic for this evening?
My topic is, I want to know if it's fair to children that has, like, little temper problems or maybe little fit issues or whatever. Is it right for parents or mothers to put their child on medication to sedate them so that they can behave themselves?
Wow. Okay, what made you choose that specific topic?
Because I have a family member, and she is my deceased brother's baby mother, and there's two kids by them, and both only our side of the family kids is on medication, but of the other three kids she has is not. So being that these are my siblings, I feel like, you know, when they're with me, they don't act like that. So why is it when they're with you, you have to medicate them so that they can behave themselves? Like, why is it that you can't take the time to discipline them or make them behave themselves or take time with them? You know, it's like it's almost like she doesn't have time for them. It's like everything is give them their medicine. But yet when they come over here, I don't give them anything. I make them behave themselves. You know, I think children like that need special attention, like more motherly love, more, you know, attention. So basically that's my issue. I just want to know if I'm wrong for not giving them medication when they're with me, because sometimes she has a fit about, oh, you shouldn't do that. Give them their medicine because I got to deal with it when they get home. But when she can't deal with it, she sends them over here to me. I mean, for times at a time, you know. So I don't understand how I could control them, and she can't. And you're their mother.
Wow. All right, Dons and Divas, phone lines are now open. The number to call is 646-200-3838. Press 1 to give your point of view on Michelle Norris' topic, or stay on the line to hear the show. Well, Michelle, what do you actually think is the reason for it? Do you think it's because maybe, you know, she has a problem that she can't sustain the kid, so maybe that's where the medication comes in at?
I think she has an issue with their fathers, you know. She has an issue with their fathers, so she takes it out on them. You know, it's like they the bad seeds. That's how I see it. I might be wrong, but I'm not the only one that say it. I think that it's an issue between their fathers. So she takes it out on them, and she don't want to deal with them. And their father's this, their father's that. But the other kids is fine. And the other kids act just the same as they act. You know,
okay.
My nephew, he's 11 years old, and he gets teased a lot in school, you know. And he acts out because he feels like everybody is against him. So children act out like that. I mean, when I talk to him and I ask to him, well, what's wrong? This is something that the moms don't do. What's the matter? What happened? You know, so I call and I tell her, I say, look, maybe it's because you're not listening to him. Maybe he is telling you the truth. Why every time he's telling you that somebody's bothering him, he's lying? You know, you send this kid to school early in the morning, heavy medicated, you know, so he's not even himself.
Go ahead.
The whole summer I had him, he was going to summer school. I never got one bad report about him, none. So obviously it's you. It's got to be you, but you're not. It's something that you're not doing. So, I mean,
okay,
this is something me and the moms argue about all the time. So I just want some feedback, like, what could it be? Is it the child, or is it the mother, or is it me?
So mainly it could be somebody. You're saying the mother, it could be the mother for the simple fact she has some animosity against the deceased father, right? So now she's taking it out on the kids to make it seem like the kids have a situation when it's really her, the one that's being bothered.
But this is going on long before my brother even passed away.
Oh, wow.
My brother even passed away. As a matter of fact, it's like it's two of my brothers that got kids by her. So it's like The other one is not here. He's away. He's down. He's in. He's upstate. So it's like she has a problem. She had a problem when they was around. So so I don't know. It's just something. Once they left her life, that was it. That's when it was. Oh, I can't deal with them. You know, they act up too much. I can't do this. I can't do this by myself. I'm a mother with five kids that I raised by myself, and I didn't have nobody to help me. And my kids came out fine. You know, I didn't have to put them on medication. When they act up, I let them know, you know. I didn't put them on medicine.
All right, well, we have a caller on the line for you right now, Michelle.
Okay.
Caller, are you there?
Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Big Bronx. What's up?
What's going on, Vanessa?
Nothing much.
How are you this evening?
I'm fine. I just wanted to call to listen to the show and, you know, give out a shout out to the GQ family.
Oh, all right. Well, you don't have no feedback for Michelle topic?
Yes, I do. Michelle.
Okay.
Vanessa.
Hi, Michelle. Okay, you said that both of your brothers has passed away, and she have children by the both
no.
of them.
Just one. Yeah, the other one is upstate.
Okay. I agree with you 100%. I never thought that it's right to put a child on medication for behavior problems. The mother has to take time to teach that child right from wrong.
Right.
And from what I'm hearing, you have a big issue with that, and she's not trying to acknowledge that she has that problem, so she keeps constantly medicating the child. In the long run,
right.
It's going to be a lot of side effects from the medication. It's going to harm the child. It's
exactly.
not going to do the child any good.
When my nephew first got on the medicine, he was having seizures. He never suffered from seizures before. You know, his tongue would hang out his mouth. He was, you know. And then another thing she does, she puts them in the hospital. Like, she really don't want to be bothered with them. She put them in the hospital. So that's
so she
why,
put them in,
you know.
She put them in
like
a psychiatric ward?
Right.
Like,
yes.
Wow.
Yes, like a hospital like that.
That's
okay.
a terrible thing.
So
Did you ever think about trying to get the kids?
No, what I do is when she talks about the hospital junk, I say, just give them here. Just send them here. So I take them, you know, until they calm down enough for her to deal with them. You know, like I said, I had my nephew for the whole summer, and he went to school from here. He never gave me no problems at all.
Well,
Michelle?
Her mind don't seem right anyway for her to be going with both the brothers and having kids by them. What type of female is she? Oh, it was like a keep it all in the family thing? So I tried to figure out. Like, she ain't mad at those kids. She mad at herself.
That's exactly what I said. Maybe it's you that need medicine. Maybe you're the
Michelle?
One with the problem.
Michelle?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm a nurse, so that's why I'm letting you know what's going on as far as that medication for them.
Right.
Right now, you're going to have to be their role model. You're going to have to be the one that encouraged them to do right, you know, do right. And whatever is going on with your nephew as far as school problems, you might have to step in as a mother figure to go to the school and figure out who is bothering him and what steps you have to take to make it stop. Because it seems like the mother is not trying to get involved all the way around. All the way around, it seems like she's not trying to get involved. Now, if you have to take the necessary steps of for her to sit her down, for her to seek psychiatric, you know, therapy or some kind of help, she's going to have to. Because like you said, one brother is upstate, the other one passed away, and it's probably a lot in her that she can't deal with, so she's lashing out at the kids. She don't want to talk about what's bothering her. So she's taking it out on them kids. And the kids is innocent. They didn't ask to come into this world.
Good point. We have another call
on
the line.
That's my suggestion to you. Is step in as a mother. You're not their mother. You're their aunt. That's the second best thing as a mother. And then look at her and say, go get help. She don't have to tell you what's going on. She don't even have to tell your family or her family. But for her to get one-on-one psychological help would be best better for her, and she can start seeing the insight of what she's doing to them kids with that medication.
Right.
Good point. Vanessa, I need you stay on the line. We have another caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. You have Michelle on the line. Did you hear our topic?
Yes, I did. Hey, Michelle. Hey, Vanessa.
Hi. How you doing?
Hi.
Hey, okay. My input is I work at a psych hospital. So as the patients are fully medicated from the parents who give the authorization to the doctor, guess what? Most of them are a handful. Like when I tell you and when I speak to most of these kids, the problem that they have is that the parents do not listen. When they come to the parent and they voice their opinion of what's going on with them in school, what's going on with them with a boyfriend, what's going on with them and their friends, the parents are so quick to pretty much say this problem. Instead of trying to sit down and come to the root of the problem, they're pretty much saying the problem. You know, so what happens? Their body gets used to all this medication. Once they go a couple days without taking the medication, they act a fool. Like, they really
You are so right.
It's sad. It's sad, but me working, you know, at a psych hospital and dealing with the kids on an everyday basis, it's hard because I'm a mother and I deal with these kids, and most of them, I can say most of them who want to do good, who are good kids just in general and by heart, they're good kids. They come from good backgrounds. Their parents just don't listen. They don't listen to what, it's like their kids, they don't have a say-so. They're not able to voice their opinion about what's going on. Meanwhile, this is their life, and they're the person that's dealing with it every day, stress with boyfriend, every day stress with girlfriend, every day stress with peers, teasing them, you know, because the medication has a lot of side effects. And even though, you know, I think Michelle has mentioned that, like, his tongue was sticking out his mouth or whatever, one of the side effects that people don't really understand is their body becomes so dependent on it. Mostly all the medications have steroids in it. The steroids,
it does.
It makes you big. And when you have a teenager that's already going through school, and now they're going through school and now they're different, now they're overweight and they're going through school, now they're wearing different clothes because clothes that's in style, 9 times out of 10, their parents can't afford to buy them a $150 pair of sneakers. So what do? They end up saying, you know what, I'm going to do this. They act out. Somebody says something to the wrong way. Guess what? They quit to take a desk and throw it at the teacher, throw books at the teacher. Like, these kids are angry, and they're angry because now they come from home, and once they come from home where they're medicated, they come to a psych hospital where they're more medicated because they're more medicated at the psych hospital. Parents think, oh, okay, this is the right
thing.
It's not.
And another thing that I want to mention, my nephew, he has a wet bed issue. The thing is, when he's home, he wets the bed, okay? So by him wetting the bed so much, when he goes to school, he has that. If she doesn't watch him bathe and make sure that he puts on clean underclothes and clean clothing, he goes to school and they tease him, and he gets angry. So
that's
I tell her. When he comes to my house, I don't give him the medicine. I don't give him that.
But you don't think it's because he's scared of the mother, Michelle? That's why he's teasing the bed?
She says that when she yells at him, he balls his fist up and at her, you know. So
yeah, but
I don't know.
He's teasing the bed, but he's with her and not with you.
No, he doesn't pee in the bed here. At first, when he first started that medicine, he was peeing in my and he was peeing. So what I did, every night in the middle of the night and get him up. I make sure he goes to the bathroom.
Okay.
So he got used to that.
Is because Michelle's not giving him the medication. That's the problem. Michelle, you're not giving him the medication, so therefore he's not wetting the bed. And when he's at home, he's fully medicated. One of the side effects, depending on the type of medicine that he's on, one of the side effects is uncontrollable bladder, which it will make you go to the bathroom on yourself, whether you're sleeping or whether you're up. That's one of the side effects for it. Like,
wow.
And honestly, that's the God-honest truth. when I tell you I've done my homework, and on different medications, the side effect is weight gain, is the drooling. It's not even the tongue hanging out. It's just the uncontrollable drooling and the uncontrollable bladder, where they're going to pee no matter what. Either they're going to pee a lot, they're going to pee a little bit, but guess what? 9 times out of 10, it's going to be uncontrollable. And that's one of the side effects to the medication.
Wow.
And he gets the body odor. He goes to school because she doesn't get up, go in there and make sure that he's washing, he's changed or whatever. So when he get on school, when he get on the school bus, he has problems. Like, 2 days ago, he's with me now as we speak. 2 days ago, this is what made me bring this topic up, because I'm tired of it, and I want to know what to do about it, because she calls me uncontrollably. I just came from the hospital with him. I said, why? He's on a bus banging his head up against the window. So I said, well, touch to that. I said, well, do you feel like that's a reason to put him in a hospital? I can't take this no more. I said, well, you know what? Back his stuff up and send him over here. So she did. And I questioned him. I said, what's the matter? What happened on the bus? He said, the kids were teasing me. He said, one boy punched him in the back of his head. He said, the other one was kicking him. He said, they were trying to jump him on the bus. He said, when he went and told the matrons made him go sit down. They didn't even listen to him. So this is the problem. This, he said, so I got mad and I banged my head on a glass on the window. I mean, he's lashing out for help and nobody is helping him.
I think he got a lot to do with her. He got a lot to do with her. So it don't really sound like nothing was wrong with him.
If you don't mind me asking.
Hmm?
How old is he?
He's 11. And then he also has a teenage daughter. She's just made 17. She doesn't take her medicine. She'll tell her mother she took it, but she won't take it. And her thing with her is she don't come home from school on time. She's picking with the kids in school, or she's bullying somebody. That is not a reason to put a child on medication. That's not a reason. She's a teenager. She's going through her peers. This is what it is. This is life.
But the hygiene aspect of it, the hygiene is something that we teach our kids when our kids are young. We teach them about hygiene. And if he was taught about hygiene, she wouldn't have to, at the age of 11, go in there to make sure that he takes a shower and changes underwear and stuff like that. Someone has to sit down with him and explain to him how important it is about hygiene. It's very important. Michelle, you're going to step up and you're going to have to be the mother figure as well as the aunt figure. You're going to have to sit him down and explain to him, because little boys have some nasty armpits. They smell like romantic. And females, when they don't, you know, wash properly, they have the odor down there, which is horrendous. It's terrible. And at the psych hospital that I work at, it's something that we try to make sure everybody understands. Hygiene is so important. Do not come up in the kitchen area if you did not take a shower, brush your teeth, and wash your face. Because you know what? 9 times out of 10 at age 11, the parents say it's okay for them to take a shower at night. So they take a shower at night.
Yes. He has to shower at night. And he has to shower in the morning when he's with me. Because he takes that medicine, it makes his underarms, it's the body odor that he gets, if he's not using a proper deodorant, it just makes him perspire, and it makes his underarms stink real bad. So I have to be on point with him. I mean, it's to the point where it makes your stomach turn. But that medication pours out of their pores. It's not a good smell. So
did you actually speak to her, Michelle, and tell her this? Did you speak to her and explain the situation to her?
We argue. Rich, we argue. Do you hear me?
But, you know, sometimes it takes two to argue. Did you try, you know, not even bother arguing with her, to try to explain it to her?
I try to talk to her. I try to make her understand. This is, well, you say that, but you're not here with them. And it's always... You don't see what I'm going through. You don't know what I go through. But my thing is, you're a lazy mom. You're very lazy. If you get up and see what's going on, you know, then maybe some of these things wouldn't happen. Get up and go in the room. Why? Oh, his room is junky. Look at his closet. He's 11 years old. He shouldn't be doing that. You should be doing that. You should be doing that. Michelle?
I agree. We have... We have
I,
a,
Michelle.
Go ahead, Vanessa, I'm sorry.
Yes?
How old is the mother?
She's 38. She's 38.
Wow.
Okay, she's 38 years old. Do she work? Do she have any kind of hobby or anything in her life where she can, or do she focus on herself, basically?
Basically. And
she focuses on herself.
The newborn baby and the little girl, which is the father that she's with now, who she's so in love with. You know, that's another issue right there, too.
So she's focused on herself. She's focused into these brand new kids by this new guy. But she seems like she has her head up his ass, basically.
Right. This guy's been in her life since my nephew was a baby. So that's who her love of her life is. So that's who she focused on, along with the two other kids she got by him.
So
all right, hold on, y'all. We have another caller on the line. We're going to bring the caller in, but Vanessa, I want you to continue what you was going to say. I just want to bring the other caller in, all right?
Okay.
Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay,
hey,
what I want to do is,
all
right, I'm going to let you introduce yourself and anything, but I want Vanessa to finish her, what she was saying, her point of view on Michelle's topic.
All right.
Okay, go ahead, Vanessa.
Michelle, you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Do she put the rest of the kids on the back burner?
She puts the ones that's related to me on the back burner.
Okay.
And the ones
that means
not related to me, they kids all they pops. She has also have an 18-year-old daughter who's in Job Corps that she prays so much. It's just the ones that's related to me that she has that's on medication that she has a problem with.
Okay. It's time for you and your family to step in, because from hearing you say that this little boy is on the bus, banging his head on the wall, God forbid it might go to the next step where y'all get that phone call that you don't want to get.
Amen.
So y'all definitely going to have to start stepping in. Y'all going to have to do something, because if y'all don't, the school is going to get to a point where they're going to not want to smell your nephew like that. They're going to call child protection.
She don't have cases already. She didn't have those cases already.
And they didn't come in the house
and
take the babies from her.
Wow. And nothing was done. Actually, T.
Yeah.
Go ahead, say your point of view.
How's everybody? Michelle, is she getting a check for these kids?
No.
Okay, because
no, she's
I was
not.
Gonna say, you know, that could have been a point, but it sounds like she's got some other issues with these two kids. And if she's got other kids, I'm not understanding why, you know, you would just cater to those kids and pick those two out of the bunch to just say, hey, you got mental issues. You know, it sounds like that was she on drugs at one time when she was pregnant with these kids?
No, you know, it's funny that you asked me that. She's never done drugs. She don't drink.
Wow.
She don't do anything. She works. So,
no,
like I said, it's about
something
that's
not right.
Baby father.
It's some serious issues.
You asked me a question.
On.
You asked me, was she getting a check? But I'm telling you the truth, I really don't know. She could
well,
be,
see,
and not
see,
even saying nothing
fine.
About it.
Because I'm going to be honest with you. A lot of women, they would throw these kids because they want to say that our black kids, most of our black kids have ADHD. A parent would throw up on
that
medication to get that check.
Okay. I work in a psych hospital, and I can tell you at this point in time, it's more white kids than black kids up in there right now.
I'm just generally speaking, you know. But I'm saying that a lot of parents would do that just to get that check. But in all reality, that kid doesn't really need that medication.
I don't
once
think
they
he
do
needs
start,
I have my niece and my nephew here with me. My niece, she don't want to keep her because she don't come straight home from school. And she starts fights in school, you know. But since she's been here, she comes straight home from school. I don't have the problems with these kids that she says she has. I really don't.
You got that the parents
really
the thing is, once they start on that medication, like I think Lavina was saying, once they start on that medication and it gets in the system and they don't have it, I was actually with a man that was in the service, and he had to come out of the service. They start giving him Zoloft. Once he didn't take that Zoloft for a couple of days, he was the worst. He was the sweetest person, but once he didn't have that medication in his system, honey, you talking about a riot? They just act out because that medication is not keeping them, keeping their head or mind where it's supposed to be.
And
yeah,
I noticed that my nephew.
So much, their body get immune to it.
Right. When my nephew is here, this is what he do. If I don't give him the medicine for a couple of days, after a while, he'll do something stupid. And then he'll go, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. He's always sorry. He's always, you know, whatever he do, he's always, all right, don't let it happen again. Don't do it again. You know, so it's like he do things on purpose to upset you so that you can say something to him.
He's looking for attention and love, Michelle. He's not getting it at home, so he's looking for your attention and love. Right. I know that. I mean, honestly, that's the way I look at that. He knows that he's doing wrong. But he knows that he'll get it, even if he gets screamed at. He's getting that attention that he's
exactly. He always go, I love you, Auntie Michelle, you know. And I
see,
tell him, I love you too,
bad, man.
And he always want to hug me, you know.
That hurts. I mean, you know, because they didn't have to be born in this world. And for them to have to go through that, I mean, it's just, it's not even fair. I'm serious.
I'm going to say some of the kids, one of the questions I think that was asked is she getting a check? Honestly, I don't think it's about a check or not. I think it's a matter of bad parenting skills. And not all
I
females.
I think she
want
to get rid of them. That's what I think. I think she don't want no parts of them, and she's just trying to find a way to get rid of them because she's quick to try to throw them in the hospital. That's
right,
her thing.
Not all females, but not all females are good parents. Just like not all males.
That's true.
Some females did not have kids whatsoever, you know. They shouldn't, but they're with a guy, and they seem to think that this is going to be the man of their life, and they decide they want to get pregnant. Her first mistake was having sex with both the brothers and having two kids. That was her first mistake.
Exactly.
And you know what?
Exactly.
And now that she has her new life with her new man and her new kids, to me, that's who she's going to worship. She's not going to worship the other kids because that was a point in her life where she knew that she did wrong, and she's not trying to live up to her mistakes. So therefore, are the kids mistakes? To her, they probably are. But to me, the kids are a blessing. And most of the parents nowadays, when they put the kids on these medications, they put them on medication because it's easier to tolerate them when they're fully medicated because they're going to do the right thing. They're going to walk that fine line. But what they fail to realize is, yeah, they'll walk that fine line for right now, but let them miss that medication for a day or two, they're going to flip that house upside down. And he's 11
now. And this is another thing, another issue. When my brother was dating, the guy that she's with now, she was cheating on my brother with this guy. She got pregnant, right? And she threw my brother out. And she thought the baby she was carrying was the guy baby. So they went on a Maury show, and Maury said that he's not the father. So my brother ended up coming on the show, and he was the father. This is a long time ago, And, you know, so I guess she was dating him from that day. But when I first saw this baby, I said, that's my nephew. That's not this other guy's baby. That's my nephew, because I felt it in my heart, and he looked just like my brother. So she ended up taking my brother on the show. Well, my brother took her. Yeah, she took my brother on the show, and it ended up his baby. So from that day forward, it was always, you're going to your house for the weekend. But before that baby was you know, identified as my brother's, it was, she didn't want no parts of us, you know. It was just the oldest daughter with his brother's child. You feel me? So that's where this all happened. To her, that was a mistake. That wasn't supposed to then his, my brother's baby. That was supposed to have been the other guy's baby. So I believe this is where all of this started, you know. So
I'm sure
I don't know.
Sound like she just got a loose booty, too.
She got more than that.
It wasn't until 5 years ago.
She
had
a booty
baby
call.
Yeah.
So she's fertile myrtle. She's one of those females that you can get with. You can have sex unprotected. And then before you even finish having sex, you know she's pregnant. She's one of those.
Right,
people.
Right. She's fertile myrtle.
She's fertile myrtle. I'm sorry,
yep.
Michelle, but she's a messed up individual. And if you don't
yes, she is.
If you don't stay
yes,
in his life, you best believe there's always the white man that's looking to arrest somebody for something. And that's
you're right.
These kids are going to turn out to be a statistic because you know what? You have the 11-year-old that's not getting the love and the parental vision that he needs. You have the 17-year-old that's not taking her medication, that's bullying the kids in school. You know what? She's bullying them because she knows that she gets that attention that way. If she bullies you,
right.
She's taking over that power. She don't have that power at home. So what ends up
right.
happening is she takes it out, that anger, that frustration, she takes out on somebody else. She's a
mm-hmm.
mess up.
Oh, she
I'm
has
sorry.
A bad attitude. Her attitude, it's like she's always angry. You know, she's always upset or angry at something or somebody. As soon as you
well,
say something,
she's going
yelling.
Through at home.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, but if you think about it, wouldn't you be? I mean,
yeah.
Got,
yeah. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. I really would.
You got siblings who are related and more than just brothers and, you know, more than just brothers and sisters. They're related because mom decided she wanted to lay down with two brothers and have babies with both
right.
of them. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
my mom has a new man, has a new family, and she's treating the rest of them like they're an outcast. So therefore, I would be mad too. I'm sorry.
And you know,
yep.
nothing for nothing. Yeah, somebody really needs to step in because sometimes
yes.
with situations like that, either them kids could end up doing something drastic or tragic to the other kids
right.
or the mother. Then what? You know, then
yeah.
these kids are in prison, you know, or either you got a dad sibling or somebody because, you know, they couldn't take it anymore.
Right. Yeah, that's
yeah.
true. That's,
well,
true.
You
that's
know.
What I'm afraid of. That's one of the things I'm afraid of. You
know,
know,
but
so,
you know what? I wouldn't just keep her, Michelle. I would make this helper. Excuse me, but that's my favorite word for women like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
I would
right.
make this helper give me parental rights, legal guardianship.
Exactly. That's what I said.
Do not just
she,
take over them.
Right.
Let
well,
like her sign the paper, sweetheart. Write it on paper. Because, see, she can go and say, that you took her kids over there, that you are holding her kids. She could say anything.
Yes, she can say that. She definitely can
actually,
say that.
Actually, she thanks me for taking them off her hands. You know,
would she say that now?
Michelle?
Mm-hmm.
She
really?
Says that now. She looks you in your face
get
and says you
funny.
Now, thank you. But
yep.
when she, if
mm-hmm.
she wants to be nasty, she can call a cop as we're speaking
you.
And say you took them kids out of her home. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And I agree
exactly.
with T. I agree 100%
you
with
some
T. You need to get
but
it on
you know,
paper.
You know, when they hear with me, the school always knows it.
Always,
it doesn't matter.
See,
when they're in
matter.
Trouble, the school calls me. They don't call
Michelle.
Her because she tells them, don't call me, call their aunt. Don't
do
call
the
me.
Right thing. Get paperwork, sweetheart.
You're right.
That's worth $1 million. Because
so,
if you went to court today
yeah.
or tomorrow, and did she say it, that you just kidnapped those kids? You ain't got a leg to stand on if you ain't got it in writing.
Exactly.
You don't have a leg to stand on.
Well, I'm going to take it a step further, okay? Now, even though she has a new man and she got the new baby with the new man, Michelle, what's his input
I'm
on
listening.
It? Because what's his input on it? He got one child that's fully medicated, that's wet in the bed at night. He got another child that don't follow rules and come home at night, right after school. So, therefore, what's his input as being the man that's in the family now? He's supposed to be the father figure. He's supposed to step up and make sure that house flows in order.
That's
whether
true.
Her or whether
how
he
is he supposed to do that when he always in a rehabilitation?
Wow.
Who, the father?
I'll be there. What the hell is going on?
The new man is in rehab.
Tell me, how what father figure? He not even there for his own kids, please. He got 24 months program ago. He can only come home from an escort, okay? He got to be escorted to see his children.
No wonder why she's going bonkers. She's giving the kids medication, the man taking medication. She on it.
Why does this help? He's probably on medication.
Wow. What kind of advice can you give anybody, please?
I see why them poor kids like they are. Yeah, they ain't got no kind of other guardians or leaders from nobody.
No, nothing.
Exactly.
Nothing.
There's no
whole damn family.
The whole household
like they fucked up.
That's real true. There's no parent guardians in that household that really take action and control of the kids. So that's why she's doing that, because a man can't back her up with
him,
nothing.
Him food and money and clothes and stuff, and I'm still walking around with high water pants on. This is what kills me. Tight pants
what?
On, looking like a little girl.
Oh, you know what?
Michelle?
Like I say, Michelle, get some paperwork. Those kids don't need to be there. I'm serious. They do not need to be in that type of environment, because somebody's going to seriously be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have some crazy people that'll take out a whole family.
That's true. Yeah, I watch the news, trust me. And they even got kids that do it too. Kids that do it too.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want
your nephew or your niece on that TV being the one that did it. So take it to court.
Because if she's sitting there, I mean, I hate to say it like this, but something is bound to happen. I'm serious.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody's going to, it's going to be the peer pressure that's going to push them over the bridge, over the edge, and it's going to be a wrap.
I don't even
Then it's going
to
be too late.
I'm going to have to do something because my nephew doesn't want to go back home. He asked me to switch his bus over here. So he could go to school from here.
They're not around while you're talking, are they, Michelle?
Huh?
These kids are not around while you're talking, are they?
I'm in the bathroom. They can't hear me.
Oh.
Michelle?
Michelle, listen.
The oldest one is not here. I made sure she left. So I don't want them to hear me talking.
You just said your nephew asked you to change his bus route to your home, school bus to your house. That's God taking through that child. You hear me? That's God taking through that child, telling you it's time to step in.
There you go.
That's why I say get paperwork. Don't just do it because this is what she, I mean, for you to just take them out of her hands like that, you're an agent.
I'm going to
keep
doing
it.
That's the first thing I'm gonna do. I'm gonna do that. You have a chance to save the 17-year-old girl.
She's getting ready to go away to job for, because her mother making sure she goes there. So she won't be here too much longer. She'll be in job.
But you know what? If she don't succeed in job court.
The way she's acting, they're going to kick her out of here. The mother told her, if they kick you out, you're not coming back here.
Wow.
So I always say, well, how could you tell her that? She's a minor. By law, you cannot do that.
She can emancipate herself, too.
But Michelle said that
her
is making sure that the daughter goes to job corps, right?
Yeah, she's finished everything. She's just waiting for her to be called.
Okay,
so not for nothing.
I would applaud her for at least making sure that the oldest one is getting out the house and she's going away, but she's not in that messed up environment and she's able to grow from it. But the sad thing is she's going to need that medication. I'm sorry.
Listen here. before she's able to get the time to consent that she can go, have to see the therapist. And because she stopped the medication, she has to start taking it. She has to have the medication within 2 weeks into her system before they call her. So it won't be a little process before she goes back. She
That's
has
right.
to take the medication,
right.
or they will not accept her. You're right about that.
That's
You're definitely
right,
right about
know.
That. That's the issue right here, right there.
And what the parents don't realize is even though the kids are young, and yes, they're, you know, minors, as we say, but what happens is they get a chart. And their chart has how many times they were in a psych hospital, how many, what medication they're supposed to be on. Guess what? All this stuff comes into play when they get older and they try and become something. All this
That's
stuff
it,
comes
yeah.
into play.
She just
all
let them kids
play.
Be labeled.
Exactly. And you know what? The sad thing is there a statistic when it comes down to being in a psych hospital? And they're what, right?
But they don't been in there already. They've been in there. Both of them already been in there. They've been in there plenty of times.
Sorry, y'all. But you know what? I'm probably going to have to, not cutting y'all off, but I'm probably going to have to get out of my house. They got some electrical wires on fire there.
Oh, wow. Be careful,
T. So I got to, I was wondering why my electric was blinking and everything. The police is out here.
Well, why are you still talking? Get out the house.
Okay. Okay.
I'll call you later.
I'll
call
you later. I will. All
right.
Okay, Michelle, you still there?
Another thing my nephew says, but when she first used to send him in the hospital, she goes, I want to go back to the hospital. It's fun. You know, it's fun in here.
Because
so,
you know what?
Why
not
you,
for nothing.
I say, why is fun?
Though,
he said, because we get to play videos and he does things there that he can't do at home.
And they end up meeting people like myself who love kids, who understand exactly what they're going through, who understands exactly what they need, and we make them comfortable. Most of the parents,
mm-hmm.
they don't like that. They feel like, okay, you come into a psych hospital, you should be strict. No, you know what? You be strict at home. But while they're here and I'm here until I get off work, I'm going to make sure they're safe. Yes, they have their medication, and they go to fitness, they go to activities, they go to their groups.
Yeah, he said that. He told me. My nephew told me that. He said they treat him nice. He likes it.
Yeah.
He said, Auntie, I want to go back to the hospital. Or I want to come and stay with you. I don't want to stay here. So I said, well, you're not going back in the hospital. That's our, you know, you could come here with me. And that's when he came here with me for the summertime to go to school.
Because what ends up happening is, just for your information, so that you're aware, when they come into the psych hospital and they start talking that I don't want to go home, CPS, ACS, you name it, they get involved. Why don't you want to go home? And then once they explain why they don't want to go home, if another family relative can't step up, and my family member has to be legit. They have to have their job, they have to have their kids, they have to have their house in order, and then they'll have to petition a court, and then they'll be able to go live with that, you know, the family member. But if they find that that other parent, if that other family member is not up to par according to their standards, they're going to a group home. They're going to another psych hospital for their behavior. And I'm being honest with you because I see it every single day. That's what ends up happening. That's what ends up happening. So as much as he says he don't want to go, you better keep him over there and do what you need to do to keep him there. Because if he comes to another psych hospital and he starts saying he don't want to go home, he want to stay there, sure, they'll keep him there because most psych hospitals are short-term. They're not long-term facilities where you can stay there for 6 months out the year and you can be okay. No, they want to keep you there for 3 to 6 months, get all your money, because that's what it is, get all your Medicaid, have all your doctor's fees.
Yeah, I remember when he was in the hospital, he was in there for 4 months at one time.
And you know what?
And she didn't even tell us. She didn't tell us nothing until like the end.
I let them know that even though the kids are here for a long period of time, what happens is the parents automatically say, the medication that you gave my child is not working. So now they try different medication for that child. And then they try other medications option for that child. So now they're a guinea pig or medication to see which medication works best for them.
Exactly, because he takes three different ones. But I don't like the way it makes him look. It's just like he's drugged up, like he's gonna nod off, like then he sleeps so long. I don't like it. I don't like it. I can't do it. It feels like I'm abusing him when I do that. It feels like I'm wrong. It feels like I'm giving him drugs. I can't do it. I can't do it, and this is what we argue about. And that's why I brought this topic up today. It's just I'm not doing that. I'm not giving him that. I'm not. I could deal with him. You know, when he's out of control, I know how to control him.
From what you're telling us, he don't sound like a little kid who needs that medicine.
He's so
more like
he
needs love and attention.
Wow.
Yes. And he'll do anything for you. Go to the store. He'll do anything. Bring the change back. That don't sound like a kid to me that need medicine. It really don't.
Wait. Okay. Wait, that's like a little question. Time is up. Hello?
Hello?
Michelle? Yes.
Yes.
That's the thing we do because our time is now up for general questions.
Okay.
All right. But Michelle,
okay.
I want you to get the final thought on the topic.
My final thought is that I don't think it's right that a child has to be medicated unless they have serious, serious issues. But for a child that just have a single mother and a mother that's growing up into a home that's having problems with their kids, that's normal. I don't think it's fair that they have to be medicated. And I love my niece and my nephew, and I'm not going to tolerate it. So you know, I'm going to do everything I could do to help them. And that's just that. I'm not going to be the one to give it to them. That's final.
As long as you're there for them, Michelle, you know, I'm pretty sure they turn out fine. But like Vanessa was saying also, and Tia Lavina, you need to go to court and you need to get papers because you need to take action because it's obvious she's not serious about these kids. And it's going to come down to where something serious is going to happen. And deep down, you don't want to feel like, well, I should have did this or I could have did that when you could take advantage of the situation now. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any shout-outs you want to give?
No, I'll give a shout-out to GQ, my family, my friend Crystal, because I know she's listening, and much love to everybody.
All right. Thank you for joining us again, Michelle. All right?
Okay. All right.
Dons and Divas, coming up next is Mikey Destruction, a.k.a. Mikey D, one of the hottest and biggest pioneers in the music industry. We will also be playing his smashing single, Extra Extra. That's right. Once again, Mikey D is in the building. So stay right there and don't move. We'll be right back. This is GQ Palace. Love,
it is butter, baby.
And you know that.
This is a GQ Palace exclusive.
Dons and Divas, welcome back. And with me right now, I have Mikey Destruction, a.k.a. Mikey D. Mike, welcome to the show. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, nothing. First things first, I want to apologize. You know, this is what I get for not, you know, listening to the music that I send out, because I had a verse on that on that song, you know what I mean? So tonight I'm going to make sure I send you the original version. I mean,
I don't want to say that. I'm asking, I'm like, what, he's throwing the wall?
Well,
no.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm
saying. The beat is still crazy.
That was my man Kappa from Louisiana. He spit it. You made it sound like a long introduction, but it was a good look.
No doubt. No doubt. It's all about you. Guess who's back? That's the main thing. We still have some other bangers they're going to hear from you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that'll work. That'll work.
Yeah. So, Mike, what's going on? You know, you've been up and down the industry and everything. We're on the journey. You're still doing your thing.
Yeah. Well, like I say, man, you can't quit it until you get it, man. And I was blessed with a gift, and God gave me this gift to use. You know what I mean? And as long as God's hand is at in my work, it'll come through. You know, maybe not right now, maybe not when I expect it, but when I least expect it, it'll bubble.
I feel you. You know, let's get into this right now, because I know people are anxious to really hear about you. Because I know some people, I was talking about you, a lot of people heard about you, and they actually listening right now because they want to know what's going on. But we're going to start off with your childhood. Let's start off with that growing up. You know what I mean? Your childhood.
Oh, that's no doubt. I was a little light-skinned, hazel-eyed, curly-haired, pigeon-toed dude from Lawton. You know, didn't really have that many friends at first, you know, but then I came out.
Yeah.
But growing up in Lawton, it was a beautiful thing. You know what I mean? And then, you know, at the age of 11 or 10 or 11 or something like that, my next door neighbor, he used to live in Harlem, but his grandmother lived right next door to me, and he used to get all of the tapes from like Harlem World and all of that stuff, you know what I mean? And he introduced me to hip hop, shout outs to D Money, and you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So at the age of 11, after hearing the Harlem World tapes with Kumo D and Busy B and the Cold Crush Brothers and all of them, it was off to the races for me, man, you know, and I started dominating Lawton first, you know. Derrick Boulevard.
You definitely was, because at that one point you was with Sleeping Bag Records with EPMD, Just Dice, Mantronics, and all them. You know what I mean? Explain that to us.
Well, basically, Johnny Quest and myself and Paul C, God bless him, God bless his soul, RIP. We had a couple of singles out prior to that, you know what I mean? My Telephone and I Get Rough back in 86 and 87. And actually, Mantronics, he was going through it with his rapper, and he was looking for a rapper. And originally, Mantronics wanted me to be the rapper for Mantronics, but I wasn't going to leave my group. And, you know, when Sleeping Bag heard our demos, they wanted us to remain a group. That's how my man Bryce Wilson got the part of the lead rapper for Mantronics. But actually, you know, Mantronics introduced us to the label and the A&R. You know, he put us on, you know, and it was off to the races after that, EPMD, all of them. And what was crazy about it, this was in 87, and that we finished the single Coming in the House and Out of Control and all of that, and the seminar was coming up right before our release date. And they knew I was a battle rapper from the beginning, and their Sleeping Bag Records was the ones that entered me into the new music seminar.
Wow. Yeah, it was definitely off to the races. Because you had a battle with one of your influences. What was that about?
Oh, that was in the New Music Seminar in 1988. You know, I had to battle a lot of rappers for the Battle for World Supremacy Championship belt. And, you know, I won the belt, and then they said it was supposed to be a battle between last year's champion, you know, and this year's champion. Not even a battle, just a demonstration, us rocking out together. And last year's champion happened to be my idol, Melly Mel. You know what I mean? So I was proud to get up there and, you know, be able to rock with him. But for some reason, I don't know, he caught some type of attitude and felt some type of way, didn't know how I gave it up, and he turned it into a battle. I don't know if it was a Queens Bronx thing, a new school, old school thing, but he definitely turned it into a battle, and, you know, he got dealt with in a horrible way.
Exactly. You know, it sounds like, you know, he wasn't expecting the flow you had to come at him. That's what
exactly.
That's just my theory. You understand? That's just my theory.
Exactly.
But it sounds like to me, because I was out there in 77 in Cedar Park, so I know all about hip-hop when it first started and everything, when African Bottom and all them was out there and the films got trampled over. I was one of the little knuckleheads out there at that time also. But to me,
no
that
question.
Situation sounded like he couldn't handle your formation you was delivering. That's what it sounded
exactly.
like to me.
And what it was, you know, I didn't come with a cheering section or no cheerleaders and all of that. It was just me and my DJ, Johnny Quest. We didn't know anybody in that crowd or none of that. I knew a few of the guys that were in the seminar, you know what I mean? But we had nobody. I could have bought the whole hood, but we didn't do that. And, you know, I was this little young dude from Queens, and I don't think he could accept that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, that's when, you know, the Bronx-Queens rivalry was going on, the KRS-Ones and the Shans and
exactly.
you know, all of that type of stuff. So I definitely had to make my mark, you know what I mean? Melly Mel started doing push-ups and all of that, so instead of me rhyming off of a beat, I rhymed off of the momentum of his push-ups and had the crowd going crazy.
All right,
you know,
see, that's another thing. So it sounded like to me you actually won that. Battle. That's what it sounds
well,
to me.
That's what happened because, well, it was two rounds, you know what I mean? I won the first round, and he was really humiliated after that. So then what he did was he took his belt and looked at me. He said, if you're a real champion, you'll battle for the belt, you know, and he threw his belt on the ground in front of me. I still had my belt, and I'm like, man, I just won this belt. I'm not going to battle for the belt, you know what I mean? I'm proud of it, and I want to take it home, you know what I mean? But the crowd,
mm-hmm.
they started, go, Mikey, go, you know, and the crowd talked me into that peer pressure. So I looked at my belt, I looked at him, I looked at his belt on the ground, and I just slammed my belt on top of his, and it was round two. And I was killing him, you know what I mean? And then
mm-hmm.
at the same time as I was rapping, another one of my idols, which happens to be Grandmaster Cash from the Cold Crush Brothers, he came up behind me and picked up both of the belts. And as I was winning this battle, he handed them to Melly Mel, and then they proceeded to walk off stage. You know what I mean? And
wow.
I couldn't do nothing. But, you know, Melly Mel's a 250-pound solid muscle dude, and I'm a 130 wet back then. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to say, yo, it's, you know, let me get that belt, man. Why are you doing this? And he just started wilding out. He slapped Jackie Paul, which happens to be one of the ladies from that was running the seminar. He pushed King down the stairs getting past. He pushed Bismarck out of the way. It was crazy. It was like some
wow.
wrestling stuff, you know. And a lot of
other words, his pride was gone.
His pride was shot, man, and it was uncalled for because he asked for it. I didn't ask for this. I was excited to just be on the same stage with him, but he took it another way, you know. And come on, I had to defend myself.
Yeah, you're definitely right. Because ain't no question about that. But, you know, in a rap game, well, he should have felt like, all right, you know, at least I'm, you know, I got somebody, take it like a man, you know, take the L like a loss, you know, and just keep it moving. Put the H on your back and keep moving. You know what
That's
I mean?
It.
But you got some people that, if they feel like they on that level, when they getting locked down, they're going to take it to another level in a different format and foundation. You understand?
Yeah.
And that's what's bad. That was what's bad about the whole thing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But let me ask you. As of today in the new millennium, if you had to do another track with him, he'd be like, all right, you know, bygones is bygones. Let's just push this out the way. Let's get this paper together. Would you do a track with him, another single with him?
Absolutely. Because Melly Mel is a legend. He's a pioneer. He's one of my favorites. He's one of the guys that got me started just by listening to him and his records and all of that. I would absolutely do it with him. As a matter of fact, you know, we shook hands and everything was cool a few years back, and he was willing to take part in my documentary. You know what I mean? So, you know, bygones are bygones, and I would absolutely do a track with him.
Mm. See, but that's definitely a good thing. Now, let me ask you this question here. Do you think the message that some artists are delivering out right now at this moment in the music industry is bad for our generation?
I think some of it is bad for their generation. You know, I really don't hear any message. I just see a bunch of bragging and you know, the fashion statement that they're making is just ridiculous. And I think it's bad for the new generation. You know what I mean? Because It just doesn't make any sense to me. And I'm not hating on the new school or anything like that, because I respect anybody that's trying to feed their family off of this music. But, you know, you have to draw the line. And nowadays there's no concept and there's no creativity anymore. You know, it's just a bunch of drawers showing, you know, and the ladies used to do that in their bikinis. You know what I mean? That was cool, but I don't want to go to a show and see a nigga's drawers. Excuse my language, but you know
exactly.
What I mean.
Exactly. You know. The pants sagging and everything.
Yeah, you know, I'm not with that.
Yeah, you got to amount them, but, you know, exactly. You know, they get locked up. They ain't going to be dropping like that. But anyway,
yeah.
Let me ask you, do you feel cheated out of funds that the artist is getting now compared to what y'all was getting back then?
I don't feel cheated because, you know, I did things my way and I should have went a different route, but I don't regret any moves that I made. But at the same time, like when I was coming up, I was rapping from my heart and not from my pocket. I was doing it for the love of the game. And then, mm-hmm. you know, the payday came. And once the payday came, if you notice, that's when they started pushing all of the cats with the real skills out of the way. You know what I'm saying? Because it was all about gimmicks and no talent. It was who you knew, this, that, and the other. So, I mean, I don't feel cheated, but uh-huh. I feel neglected, you know what I mean? Because I really have skill. And I'm not going to let the industry put an age on my talent, because talent is ageless, you know? So I don't really feel cheated. But I would appreciate it if they cut a check, though. That'd be nice.
I feel you, because you're definitely one of the pioneers that has, I'm going to say, that helped African Americans start the hip-hop scene. You understand? Because a lot of people don't know that you're definitely big in the game. They know
you are.
They know your name and everything, you know, but what they fail to realize is you're definitely up there with African Bambaataa in them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no question.
And I'm going through that tonight. I know it's a lot of people, when I was talking, you know, on my job and everything, they know exactly who you are.
That's what's
one, you know, to bring it up, one of my coworkers was like, you know, I said, Mikey D, you know, he's going to be on the show. He was like, Mikey D. And then I was like, you know, he was a large professor. He was like, oh, Mike, the light skin, he was kind of big back then. You know exactly who you was, the main source and everything.
Right. I hope he was talking about reputation big and not size, because I was never big.
Yeah.
Because I don't want people to see me now and be like, man, didn't he say he was big before? And not, you know,
well,
that's how rumors started.
You definitely know who you are. Ain't no
that's
question about it, Mike. You know what? But let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you, definitely bringing the hip-hop back, you know, with that new school flavor. You understand? And that's what's good about it, because for as long as you've been in the game and you're still coming out there, you're definitely hurting them with something. They're going to see as we go along and as I play these singles by you that you're definitely hurting them. So let's talk about your single right now, The Chosen One.
Okay. Well,
how did
the
you
chosen
come up
one,
with that concept for that single?
That right there, it's because at one point, at that particular time when I wrote that rhyme, that song, I was dealing with a lot of the old school cats, and I was being embraced by the old school cats. And at the same time, I could walk to the store and it could be a fight for the young dudes out there. And I, you know, they asked me to join the fight, but I spit and I'm getting respected by the young dudes. So at that time, I was like, you know what? I'm the type of dude that could bridge the gap, because I could go with the old school. I could go with the new school. I'm right up the middle. I get respect from both sides, which to whereas they don't respect each other. And I could bridge the gap. So I felt that I was the chosen one for that job. And that's when I came up with that concept.
All right. Well, you know what? I want to get into that single right now. You know, let them hear a little something. Well, you know, as time goes by, they're going to hear more. But we definitely going to let them hear what's going on with that single, The Chosen One. All right?
All right. No question.
All right, Dons and Divas. Phone lines are now open. The number to call, 646-200-3838. Press 1 to speak to Mikey D or stay on the line to hear the show. This is another one of his bangers, The Chosen One. Remember where you heard it first, GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment.
It's butter, baby!
Alright.
This is a GQ Palace exclusive.
Uh-oh. Oh. I told you motherfuckers I wasn't going nowhere. It's your boy Mikey D, man. And I'm gonna keep it simple for y'all, man. Pay attention. Got me in a strange position. I'm hot, and I am what the game's been missing. I put my life on my words, and my words on the mic. Should I write? Gonna send all these birds in the flight. You ain't invincible, I will touch you, nigga. We ain't breaking bread together, so fuck you, nigga. Want your man to come and help, but they roll too late. Fuck around like after seven, get your whole crew eight. That's metaphorical, historical. This is your memorial. Played many cats before you. Should have read the editorial. Get all of you. Anytime you call, I ain't worried about the size, one rhyme fits all. I'ma brawl till I fall, I ain't scared of y'all. Put a million on the table, I'm prepared to ball. Respect the game, niggas better check the name. If the shit get out of hand, I gotta check with pain.
Springfield Gardens High School in Queens. Jay Ski used to go to Andrew Jackson High School in Queens. And we had two mutual friends, you know, that used to argue about who was the best in each school. So, as I said, Jay was the best in his school. I was the best in my school. And somehow they got us to want to battle each other because we didn't know each other at the time. So it was like, all right, I'm repping my school, and he's repping his school. So they got us to meet at this place called Roller Castle in Elmont, Queens, where Black Spectrum, that was hosted by Flavor Flav, they used to have these events in the roller skating rink. So, you know, me and Jay, we met there, whatever, to battle. And before we went on stage to do anything, we both had our books and books of rhymes, you know what I mean? And, you know, we slapped five, and we compared notes. It's like I said a rhyme, he said a rhyme. I said a rhyme, he said a rhyme. So it was like I'm bugging out because his voice texture is like mine, and his flow was very similar to mine's also. You know what I mean? So instead of battling that night, we went up on stage and we rocked out together. You know, then he started coming around the way a lot, this, that, and the other. And at that time, we had a group called the Sensational Five. I was Playboy Mikey D. You had Loverboy PC, Ever-Loving Kid Ice, and Lovable Little B. And we needed the one more rapper to make it five. And Jay Ski was Jay Ski. So anyway, he went home, he changed his name. Guess what his name was? Cool J. And I was like, Cool J is dope. And I was like, you need like a nickname in front of that, something like a Playboy or, you know, something, whatever. So me and him was walking up Merrick Boulevard, and I was like, yo, what about ladies love Cool J? He always wants the ladies to love him, this, that, and other, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he ran with it, you know what I mean? Ladies love Cool J. And then when he got on Def Jam, him and Rick Rubin, you know, they had to shorten it because Rick thought the name was too long, Ladies Love Cool J. But L didn't want to give up the name, so that's how the LL came about.
But you was mainly the founder of the LL.
Basically, and even if you pick up his book, I Make My Own Rules, pick that book up from Cool J and read page 9, paragraph 2, and he breaks it down himself. You know what I'm saying? And it, you know, if you ever get a chance to check out my documentary, he's in it, and he breaks it down also. So, I gave him that name.
And, you know, also, we're going to get back into the music, but let's get into your documentary real fast.
All right.
You know, Rapper's Delight.
Okay. Well, right. Rapper's Delight is the book.
Yeah, my fault. We're going to get into let's get into your book. I apologize. I do apologize.
Right.
Let's get into
book,
Rapper's Delight.
All right.
Now, what made you come up with that title and decide to write that book?
Well, that came up from me and my fiance's relationship. You know what I mean? We got a very awkward and odd relationship because basically she's political. You know, she's very high in the government and, you know, she does really big things. You know what I mean? And me, I'm that dude from the street. You know what I mean? And for some reason, we connect. So the book is basically a love story because I'm a rapper and she's the delight. You know what I mean? And it's like both of our worlds together. It's just crazy. It's real bugged out. You know what I mean? So I had to write about it. I can't really explain word for word because it's real deep. Like, you know, I want to grab the interest. It's a love story, though, but it's about a hip-hopper and a politician. So just imagine Michelle Obama going with DMX. You know what I'm saying? How different are those worlds? You know what I mean? And that's basically us. But there's a lot of drama that we both went through on both sides. And at the end of the day, you know, every rapper needs that strong woman to be behind them. That's, you know, every male rapper needs that strong woman behind them.
Now, how long did it actually take you to complete the book? I mean, the writing, the picture, the cover, you know, because you got to decide on a hard copy of the cover, the soft copy of the cover. How long did it actually take you to complete it?
You know what? To be honest with you, it's not even complete yet. It's still in the middle age stages. You know what I mean? We took the baby steps first. Now we're in the middle age stages, and we really getting mature with it now. So I'm basically still looking for help, you know, because it's real crazy. I gave the story on a recording, and I had somebody writing it, and it's just crazy. It's a lot of work, man, and a lot of time. And I got my arm, I feel like an octopus because my hand is in so many different things, and it's like I can't take, you know, the time, the 100% time to just focus on that because I'm doing so many other things at the same time. So it's taking a little bit more time, but it's that's like a surprise.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to ask. You got a lot going on, the music, you know, you're doing your book, and, you know, you got to be there with the wife, you know. So how do you actually balance that out?
It's hard work, man. Put it this way, man. It's hard being me. I just make it look easy.
I feel you.
I'll be honest with you, man. It is hard being me, man. I just make it look easy, man.
I feel you. I definitely feel you. Let's get back into the music thing, because at one time, back in the days, it was Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick that came out with the show. You wrote the no-show for the Symbolic 3. How did that turn out?
That was a good look right there, you know, because I had a manager named Arthur Armstrong who happened to know Jerry Bloodrock, who was the owner of Reality Records, which was the label that Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick was on. And Armstrong, he knew I was a master of parodies. You know, I was like the Weird Al of hip-hop before anybody was redoing anybody's records, you know. And Jerry Bloodrock asked me if I would do a parody of the show because he knew somebody was going to come out with an answer record. And what better than to have both records on his label? That's how he was looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I put the Symbolic 3 together. Well, actually, the Symbolic 3 were together already. And I just wrote the song, you know, and I wrote myself in the song, this, that, and the other. It was a Dougie Fresh disc, but it wasn't too hardcore. It was more dancey and poppy, you know what I mean? But that record really took off. It did good for us in the 80s, you know. Did a lot of good things.
Yeah. Now, you also met, who was it, Freddie Jackson and Jeff Redd that introduced you to another fire group back then?
Jeff Redd, yeah, I used to hang out at Hush Productions studio, and Jeff Redd was there all the time. Jeff Redd was there all the time, and he was telling me, because I used to always go up there freestyle, so what he was saying was he knew a group that needed a rapper really, really bad, and they were already established, but he wouldn't tell me the group's name or anything like that. He just gave me an address, called them, and told me to come through. You know what I mean? So we went over there, and when I knocked on the door and they answered the door, it was King Cut and Sir Scratch. I knew who they were right off the top. It was Main Source guys, you know, and I didn't know at the time Large Professor had left the group. So, you know, I did a little, I guess you would say, audition or whatever, and it was like, from that point on, you know, that's when I took Large Professor's spot. You know, no beef with Large Professor or nothing like that on my ass. They had the beef with him, but, you know, I filled his shoes real quick, temporarily.
Yeah, that's understandable. Let's talk about your single, Extra Extra. How did you come up with that title?
Extra Extra, well, because I thought that song was extra, because the person that produced it is actually the same person that's doing the hook. And if you listen to it for the first time and you don't see the faces, you would swear that the person that's doing the hook and whoever did the beat was a brother. You know, no offense to any other nature or culture, but my boy E-Rock, he happens to be a white guy that looks like he just surfs and rides skateboards all day. You would never expect this out of him. So I thought that was extra. You know what I mean? So
yeah. That's
when we came up with that title. And like, as far as the lyrics, I just went with it. I just went in. That's it.
Yeah, because you're definitely killing it. So we're going to get into that right now. All right, Dodge and Diva, this is another banger by Mikey D, Extra Extra. This is GQ Palace. Y'all feel the heat? Love and entertainment. It's butter, baby.
This is a GQ Palace exclusive.
Oh, that's that shit. Yeah. It's your boy Mikey D in the building, man. You know what I mean? It's a long time coming. Every time I'm walking down the street, motherfuckers always asking me, yo.
Extra, extra, read all about it. He's rocking the mic, you know we're taking over. No time for talk, cause ready to explode, yeah. Always tell them better, ready to week. A long time, I'm here telling them never ready to see.
That's right.
the deal, y'all. You already know what it is. It's your boy, Mikey D, NYC representative, you know what I mean? Q Burrow, we does the damn thing. Mark Mills up in this motherfucker. Starks holler. We got my man G-Rab. Y'all know what we do. Right now, I'm about to blaze this track with my dude E-Rock. What the fuck? Niggas must be up to something. Standing there frontin' like they tough or something. Big man tried to flex soon as I seen him, but he ain't know I was looking for a reason to lean him. First one of them to jump is the one that's getting slumped. Birds won't stop flying till the clip is dumped. Punks jump off and get beat down, but the mean of silence that makes a sweet sound. I know it's 1 o'clock and I ain't from your block. To keep it real with you, I ain't the one to stop. I drop some more from blocks to the shopping malls. Beef, I make it heated like popping small. Spit that earthquake shit, gotta rock the walls. Come at me, these niggas ain't got the balls. Blow a nigga out the frame, talk a nigga out his chain. No we niggin' on my name, I'll pick it out the game and remain as one of the best, son and the rest. Don't drive around with the gun and the best. Reputation on the block still thorough. My name's legend in the hood and the rest of the borough. State to state, tape still making cake with ease. But I had to upgrade the CDs, MP3s, overseas remember me. You could cop it on the corner with a vendor's beat or satellite radio, anywhere you go. If my rhymes was put on clothes, you would wear my flow. I can't help it if the industry shows the hate like it closed at 8. How long am I supposed to wait? Y'all motherfuckers thought it was over, huh? Just cause y'all ain't here, dude, in 20 years. Don't get it twisted, nigga. It gets better with time, you know what I mean? I'm like a fine wine. Recognize. I'm the rap extraordinaire, not ordinary but rare. My category is bare over any rapper out there. Niggas talk but don't be walking the walk, they get chalk. And I soar like a hawk through New York, rest my head in Queens. Wake up, gyrate, represent the tri-state, catch cake, migrate. To wait for the damn court dates, the shit that I hate. I lay in South Central LA till the lie straight. Mikey D, keep it real, I don't appeal or make deals. Kidnap the squeals and prepare last meals for real. When I'm rhyming, I'm as smooth as they come. Saying word, God, cause I be moving them. Son, keeping money coming, competition, I keep them running. My click is gunning, you ain't got no kids, who the fuck you sonning? Breaking records in this rap shit, perhaps it's cause I don't get down with the bullshit, gun clap shit. Only time I take is time to take a serve a nigga. Not for murder with my fingerprints all on the trigger. Cause real brothers keep it silent, all you hear is when I'm about to get violent. You know what to do, baby, say no more. Mikey D, forever. One.
Next up, read all about it. Keep up in the machine, you know we're taking over. No time to talk, I said we're ready to explode, yeah. I'm only feeling that you're ready to be. A long time, I see a feeling that we're ready to see. Next up, read all about it. Keep up in the machine, you know we're taking over. No time to talk, I said we're ready to explode, yeah. I'm only feeling that you're ready to be. A long time, I see a feeling that we're ready to see.
Mike. Yeah? I'm going to have to blame that on my switchboard operator. She want to play Large Pro so fast that.
Yeah, I peeped that.
But, like I was, you said that's a Caucasian guy singing an extra?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My man E-Rock.
Wow.
And he's from Connecticut. Yep, he's from Kent, Connecticut.
He's definitely doing it, too.
He got some heat that's coming out also, man. He's a singer, you know what I mean? He's nice with it.
He's killing it. I am dead serious. He's killing it. How did you wind up meeting up with him?
Well, I met with him because I used to hang out in Connecticut a lot with my boy Greg Rabb and the whole crew, you know what I mean? And Eric, who's E-Rock, he used to be around with them a lot, you know, at that time. And as the years progressed, he started getting into production and stuff like that. And, you know, one day he came to New York and, you know, we bumped heads and he let me hear some of his music. And he was doing the Jamaican style and I bugged out. I would have never thought it was him, you know, because I know this guy and I'm like, how the hell did you know what I mean? He's crazy with it. But, yeah, I knew him for many, many years, man.
Wow. Let's talk about you being the newest member in the group Jazzy Five.
Oh, my God. That's like an honor to me, man, because yo, these are the guys, man, that used to be in the Harlem Worlds and all of that, and I used to listen to their CDs. I mean, their tapes, their cassette tapes, you know, when I was younger, and I used to dig the routines, and, you know, I used to love Mr. Freeze's voice. They had this chemistry that was just crazy as a group, you know, and Mr. Freeze, he reached out to me when I was a young dude, you know, because I used to do the battling stuff, and I used to go from hood to hood, and one day, you know, I wound up in the Bronx and somebody bought me the Soundview, whatever, and I met Freeze, and it was like, wow, this is the dude from the Jazzy Five. To make a long story short, years later, like now, I'm the newest member of the Jazzy Five, and it's incredible. Like, even if you look on YouTube, Jazzy Five performing at SOB's Part 1, You'll see the chemistry we have and how happy I was to be a part of that. So we're about to do big things, man. It's crazy. It's an incredible feeling.
Chuck Freeze, yeah, he's definitely a cool brother. Yo, shout out to Chuck Freeze, too, because he's definitely doing it, too. You know
Indeed.
What I mean? He's definitely doing it. Ain't no question about it. We actually have a caller on the line for you.
Okay.
Caller, are you there? Carla, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you have Mikey D on the line.
Hi,
hey.
How
you doing?
Good.
All right. I'm doing good.
That's good. I have a question for you.
Okay.
You said that you would do a track with Melly Mel, but what about Grandmaster Cash?
Grandmaster Cash, you know, recently, you know, we had a little episode, you know what I mean? And I was kind of offended by the way things went, you know, and Kaz went about it in a wrong way. So right now, the only track that I would do with Grandmaster Kaz is a battle track, you know, because I'm feeling a certain way and I can't forgive him for what he did, you know. And this is not the first time that he pulled a stunt like this, you know. So I really can't forgive him. But I would do a track with him, but it would be a battle track.
It would be a battle track?
Yes.
Okay.
But
okay.
He's still my idol. I ain't going to front. He's one of the best that did it. I still respect him as an artist, but it's just the event that took place that he feel in a different way. And I normally don't hold grudges.
So I'm sure you're not going to hold one this time either. I mean, you know, the man above will block off lessons if he holds them. So I'm sure you won't hold it like this time either. But a battle, that sounds good. Hopefully you'll come back on GG Palace for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it'll be fun. You know, I think it'll really be fun. You have two different generations, and, you know, we can get a lot of tension off, you know. We know it doesn't have to be a battle where we're talking about, I'll get the guns and come shoot your family up. No, it don't even have to be all that. But, you know, let's just test skills and, you know, see what we can come up with. But he's, you know, shout outs to Grandmaster Cass. He's still my man. And, you know, like Jesus forgave everybody, I got to forgive him. But, you know, I just don't forget. That's all.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So you wouldn't, would you do it with, anybody else from the Cold Crush Brothers, like JDL? And
JDL is my man, absolutely. I would definitely do a track with JDL. I would do a track with Cass, too. I had to give the young lady a hard time because I was mad that she said his name. But, you know, I was feeling a certain way, and you know how that go. But I would do a track with Cass, man. And, like, you know, you got to forgive. And, you know, that incident I don't think it should have went down that way. But it's all gravy in the Navy. You know how we do it.
You know, exactly, you know. It's brushed off his shoulders. You know what I mean? That's all it is. Now, let me ask you. I know you and the Jazzy Five, y'all planning on doing some new material. You know, are y'all planning on doing some new material and putting it out anytime soon?
Yes, sir. We're about to start production in a few weeks. As soon as Jazzy finishes that studio in his basement, we going in. And he has a very nice studio and a nice, you know, nice space and everything. So the environment is there. Got all of his brothers together. And we definitely going to start working and thinking about some tools and stuff like that. It's going to be a real good look. We definitely going to put something out this year.
A step from the Jazzy Five for the new millennium.
That's right. Yes, sir.
You know, like, what can they expect to be, like, presented to them? What, like, you know, what type of material can they expect for them for coming for the new millennium from the Jazzy Five?
It's gonna be up to date. You know, it's gonna be a mixture of it's gonna be a chemistry of old school, new school, but it's gonna be up to date. It's gonna be, the sound is gonna be completely different, but it's gonna be that Jazzy Five sound as far as the routines, the harmonizing, everything. But the music is gonna be up to date, and the rhymes, the individual rhymes, is gonna be up to date. You know, it's gonna be a nice thing. People can look forward to that.
Okay. We have another caller on the line for you. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you have Mikey D on the line, one of the biggest
callers
in the building.
Hi, Mikey. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Okay. I'm just tuning in, and I want to know, have you made any videos or?
Well, yeah, I made, actually, I only made two videos in my whole career. The first one was, Put Your Body in Motion, and I was with a group called No Strings Attached. It was me and my partner, CeeLo. And I made a video with Main Source, which is What You Need is the Source. And you can check that out on YouTube. And even if you go on YouTube, there's a lot of clips of me up there doing a lot of different things that could be put into video, but we just YouTubed it.
Okay, that's Mikey D, right?
Yeah, MIKEY/D.
Okay. Do you ever think, I know, you know, you're a pioneer and everything, but do you ever think that you would be in any plays or anything?
You know what? I was just offered a hip-hop play to do from my boy Haywood Nelson, who happens to be Dwayne from What's Happening. Hey, hey, hey. You know.
Really?
Yes, he's working on a play, and he wants me to be a part of that, you know, and I'm looking forward to doing the Broadway thing. I'd rather do that instead of the movie thing because I like to be on stage and I like to do it live, you know, if there's a mistake.
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, I'd rather
you
do
can cover it up.
Thing.
Yeah, you can
That's
cover
right.
it up, a mistake, yeah, in a play,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Oh, okay, exactly. then. Yeah, I mean, you know, hey, keep up the good work and push it forward.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem.
All right.
Now, Mike, I know you did some things with the Warlocks, who was also known as the Locks.
Yes. When I joined the group Main Source. We were working on an album called F What You Think, and you know, we wanted to do a posse track. We wanted to do something like Live at the Barbecue. You know, the way they introduced Nas to the world and Akineli and all of them to the world. We wanted to do something like that. So we came up with a song called Set It Off. And we auditioned the Warlocks. And at that particular time, Styles P, he wasn't down. It was just Sheik and Jadakiss. And when they spit for me, I was impressed. I was like, yeah, I want these dudes on the track,
okay.
definitely. You know, so we did Set It Off. So it was the Warlocks. Also, we had, her name is Ma Barker now, but she used to be Sean Queen. She's a real hot female rapper that's still doing her thing. And also MC Lotto, which is my brother. And he's nice, you know. Oh. But definitely, man, shout-outs to the Locks.
All right. We have another caller on the line for you, Mike. Cool.
Okay, cool.
There?
Yeah, I'm here. What's up, my man?
Yeah, you have Mikey D on the line.
What's all up,
right,
man?
All right. What's good, family?
What's going on? You got it going on, man. I was just curious, does it cause any conflict, you being a rapper, with your family?
Absolutely not, because I've been doing this since I was 11. Didn't do it as a hobby. It was like something that's in my blood and something that I couldn't stop. And my family, they know this, so I push hard, and my family pushes hard with me. So
yeah.
there's no confusion with the family and the hip hop thing.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely support me.
That's what's up. Yeah, that's the thing I want to ask. You know, if there was any confusion.
No confusion at all, man. Everything is good.
Yeah. Well, keep up the good work, my man.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it, man.
All right. Okay. Mike, let me ask you. Did you ever consider in having like a symphony with Jazzy Five and the Locks? Did y'all even discuss? I know it's kind of early right now, but did y'all think about it?
Well, yeah, the thought crossed my mind a few times. Actually, Mr. Freeze brought it to my attention that we should do something with them, and I think it's a good idea. And I think it'll work also. I think it'll really work, you know?
All right. But what I want to do right now, I want to get into that single that my switchboard operator is so anxious to play, Large
All right.
Pro. Tell us a little bit about that before we get into it.
Okay, that song right there.
You can introduce it. You can introduce it after that.
All right, you want me to introduce it now?
For sure. So, you know, tell what you got to say about it. You introduce it.
You want me to do the you want me to do the radio disc jock thing? All right, here we go.
No doubt.
Nah, this song right here, Large Pro, it's basically the concept came about because a lot of people thought Large Professor and me had beef because of the Main Source incident, you know what I mean? And me and Large Professor, we never had a problem. Large Professor is my man, always been my man, and always will be my man. Unfortunate things happened before I got into the group, and that's why he left, and that's why they put me down. And basically, the same S happened to me. So after I left, Large Professor, you know, people were asking me, yo, when you going to do a cut with Large Professor? When you going to do something with Large Professor? If you didn't know, I already did a bunch of tracks with Large Professor. But this one, he did the beat. I spit the rhyme just to set the record straight. So here you go, y'all. Check this out.
This is a GQ Palace exclusive.
Oh, that's that shit. Yeah. It's your boy Mikey D in the building, man. You know what I mean? It's a long time coming. Every time I'm walking down the street, motherfuckers always asking me, yo, when you gonna do some shit with Large Professor, man? When you gonna do some shit with Large Professor? Hey, yo, here it is, you know what I mean? Large Professor provided this track, and I'm gonna do a little something like this. I'm in the cut, and people still talk about me, cause they can't live with, and they can't live without me. Niggas doubt me, cause of the Audi that I talked about from way back. Don't eject me, but respect me when it's pumping, and they lay back. For the wave cap and the waves back, don't even have a gray black. How many niggas my age spitting can say that? You'll say that. I'm only here for the cheering section. I keep them listening, even with an ear infection. Throw your ones up, thugs, throw your guns up. Cancers, throw your lungs, white boys, throw your thumbs up. Puerto Ricans know they gotta throw their buns up. Yo, that's my nigga for real, player one love. You think some fool with some weed in the blunt, some new kicks, some tight jeans, and a mouthful of front is gonna step into my cypher and put me on the spot. Hey, yo, hold up, turn that music off, Large Professor. I'm too much for you to handle, I'm ahead of your time. You know it's trouble if I start to turn red when I rhyme. I'm clever with mine, got a flow that'll never rewind. Even not around, shut them down every time. So call your crew up, and they gonna do what? Run and go and get a pistol, all I gotta do is whistle. That's real noise for your boy, show you exactly what it's like to play with grown up toys. So now you know what it is, man, you know what I mean? Nigga ain't lose nothing, my brother. I'm in the building, Large Professor, in the building. Main Source, the real Main Source is right here, in your face, you know what I mean? Album coming soon, man, brace yourself. Out.
Mike.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, she was definitely going to kill him. Ain't no question about it. Y'all definitely going to kill him. That's real talk with it. Y'all definitely going to kill him. Let me ask you, you also got like a group, something y'all got going on, right?
The new
teaching everybody.
This project's going on. Oh, my God. This project that we are working on is going to be Queen's biggest comeback ever. You know, I'm working with the legendary Southside Queens, DJ Grandmaster Vic. This is crazy. This is crazy. You know what I mean? 50 Cent big Vic up all the time. You know what I mean? Southside all day. And then I'm from Lawton. You know what I mean? So it's like you got Lawton and Southside doing some stuff together. We never did that, not even in the parks back in the days when we was doing it big. But we about to do it, you know, for the love of the game. You know what I mean? This is just like Fat Cat is from Southside. Tommy Montana is from Lowellton. That's like Fat Cat and Tommy Montana getting money together.
Wow.
It's Mikey D and Grandmaster Vic doing it big. So we got Mr. Cheeks on board, Bismarck on board. You know, we even got Getting Play ready to rock out. You know what I mean? Come on, man. Queens all day.
Wow.
It's going to be crazy. This is going to be a Queens joint that people are definitely going to remember. It's going to be a classic.
I feel you. We run out of time. But before we even run out of time, I want you to give your information and all that, Mike. But I got to have you kick a freestyle for me, man.
All right.
I definitely got to have you kick a freestyle for me. Because you killed. I just needed to really see, like, all right, bro. He's definitely all killed. Right. Like, I already know from your tracks how you coming at them. But let them know in another format how you really coming at them. So they could be like, oh, yeah, he's definitely he's coming hard. But he's coming harder with a freestyle, even worse than what we thought it would be.
Word up. Yo, matter of fact, I'm going to do this joint, man. Like, you know, I know y'all remember the human beatboxers doing all that boom, boom, bat. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doing that stuff with their mouth and all of that. I used to feel a certain way about human beatboxers because they was taken away from the rapper, like the rapper used to take away from the DJ. So this is what I'm going to do. Check it out. You ready for it? Here we go. Human beatboxers make me sick on stage because they be jumping up and down like they're into a rage. Playing stupid beats, each one of them dumb. Looking just like a seizure, like they swallowed their tongue. Playing these beats until the lips turn blue. And yo, I tell you, it ain't nothing that I can't do because I could like Fat Boys. A boom, art of noise. Gremlin rock. But I don't want to beatbox. Something brand new that I want to unleash. Hey, yo, this shit is fly and it's my masterpiece. These human beatboxers is taking my fame when all the sound the same. At every jam they do. And that 1-2 is bullshit too. So all you beatboxers, take a second look. I'm Mikey D and I'm a human rhyme book. I communicate and I don't exaggerate. Manipulate your mind and your thoughts, I'll postpone. Eliminate any rhyme you create. Make you masturbate with your microphone. Knack, whack, lack, tack, crack, tack, knack. Flick a fact, fire, crack, knick, knack, patty, whack. Elevate, stimulate, generate, operate, terminate, eliminate. Demonstrate, cooperate, boss, toss, 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 make toss. Step off. You know what I mean?
Yo, Mike, you ain't no joke. Yo, we gotta go ahead, yo.
Yo,
we gotta go ahead, man. Yo, you definitely doing it, yo. And we definitely gonna push your joints hard. They don't know about that Valentine thing I got set up that you shit with Charlie Wilson. We gonna let
them know
about that, too. You know what
I mean?
We gonna say that for the bomb explosion, you know, because we gonna tear the world up with that joint, too.
All right, Mike, that's what it is. I really want to
thank you for joining us tonight. I want you to give all your information out to everybody right now, Twitter, Facebook, everything, so they can hear your flavor and all that.
All right, no doubt. You could Twitter me at the real Mikey D, you know, at Twitter.com, whatever. Facebook, when you go on Facebook, it's Mikey Destruction, DESTRUCTION. Holla at your boy. And, yo, before I leave, I want to give a real special shout-out to my crew and to Beauty. You know, if y'all ladies out there ever need facials, massages, or whatever, you know, just check out N2 Beauty and N2Beauty.com, and y'all won't be disappointed, man. This is the crew. But anyway, yo, thanks for having me, man. You know I got to shout out to
Mike,
you.
No doubt, it was an honor having you on, man. I really thank you for joining us tonight.
Absolutely, man. Anytime, man. You know how it is.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, Dawes and Divas. Coming up next, Ruben Rice, song arranger and writer, one of the biggest producers from Baltimore, is here to talk to us about his lifestyle in the music industry. We will also be playing two of his tracks that he produced from two of the artists that he got. So stay right there and don't move. We'll be right back. This is GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment. It's butter, baby.
Hey, it's your boy Young Kino. Emil T on the track. Omar Cruz. Where's Khalifa? Hey,
let's get together and take a trip. I'm not for
at my neck and wrist. The chicken should know that I'm ballin', ballin'. They see me on the road and they heard me on the song with Keno. They won't stop ballin'. Yeah. Lil' mama, stop stallin'. Hop in the truck, hit this, I'm rollin'. You wanna rock star, darling? Ride through my city, something drop top foreign, foreign. One hand on the wheel, heard I'm working with a full deck, so what the deal? Tell me what the deal. Say she love my Pittsburgh slang, so I let her wear my Pittsburgh chain. Now I'm talking about leaving, man.
Get together and take a trip.
I told her let's dip out, swooping, chunky rims all poked out, cooping, car choice when I roll out, whip and drop the top and let her blow out, let's take a trip by the mall out, you rolling, well let's ball out, girl life with me is life of luxuries, I ball out, I don't just live comfortably, selling dreams, talking about what they try and be, me I call shots and tell you how it's gonna be, it's a thousand of them and only one of me, I'm just getting started, still got life in front of me, can we roll?
Let's get together and take the trip.
No shopping sprees on Melrose, goes in the PF Chang's. Not ever meeting your folks, no, we not holding hands. Just what we got is special, much different than your man. He likes to cuddle with you, I like to smack your ass. I'm never lighting candles, I never bring you flowers. But while your boyfriend's at work, I'm crushing you for hours. Cause we don't share emotions or address enemies. I'm like a private soldier, we friends with benefits. Ain't no commitment, I hit it and then I'm 95. You just from the beginning, so why you bitching wine? He likes to spoon with you, get real romantic. I like to zoom with the camera, I'm a fanatic. Fogging up the lens, hoping in your legs. I ain't gonna show nobody, trust me, only show my friends. Cause you a superstar, far from Lupe. Head game like Paris, you the new Kim K. Hey.
All right, Dons and Divas, welcome back. And with me right now, I have Ruben Rice. Ruben, welcome to the show. What's going on, Ruben?
Ain't nothing to it. I'm chilling in the cut, trying to make a living. What about yourself?
I can't call it. I might spoil it, you know?
That's what's good. That's what's good.
How's everything in Baltimore?
Man, everything is rolling, man. Everything is good. Everything is good. I'm chilling in the studio as we speak right now with a new female group, Triple Tape. Yeah, so we're about to do some work with them when I get up off the head. But, you know, always got to keep something new.
Oh, no doubt, no question. Now, you've been doing music at a very young age, right? What was like your first instrument you had picked up to play?
The first instrument was actually a piano that my pops used to have in the living room, and that kind of kicked off the whole melody thing.
And then from there on, it was like, all right, you know, you got the keys and the format and everything. Could you even remember the first tune you played on that piano?
Nah. actually, the first tune, now, I'm kind of showing my age, you know, when I say this, but The Incredible Hulk. The Incredible Hulk, you know, I don't know if you know, used to be the show, there wasn't a cartoon. And, you know, with the whole David Banner thing, and it used to be that was the first joint that I learned to play.
Now, when you started out, you was like in a family gospel to continue in a church, you know, in school choir, right?
Right, right.
All right, explain that to us.
Well, I mean, most cats, or some people, you know, when they first born, they can think of their first songs and who they heard. But my family household, it was all about gospel. My father was a preacher. I got over 22 aunts and uncles. Half of them are preachers. So gospel was the main thing in my household. So while everybody else is probably listening to Marvin Gaye or a little bit of Sam Cooke or, Rapper's Delight, I was listening to the Mighty Clouds of Joy and, you know, the Five Blind Boys and things like that. So singing was actually natural, being my father was a preacher in church. So he kind of forced, me and the rest of my siblings to start singing. And it was just kind of natural, you know.
Oh, so it's just something that just came to y'all.
Yeah,
like,
you know.
You're also a writer, right?
Yeah, that's something that I picked up over the course of the years.
Now, I know we got some of your artists coming on. I don't know if you
right.
vote for the artists that you got coming on at this moment. Feedback.
Yeah. A little bit of feedback. All right, let me turn down one of the joints I got over here. All right. Are you good now?
Yeah.
All right, cool beans.
Yes. So I don't think, did you do anything for the artist that we're going to feature that you produced for tonight?
Yeah, actually, these two tracks that you're going to hear tonight is actually the same artist, which is Cynthia Yvonne. One track is just featuring a rapper that I work with by the name of Blizz. And I actually done those two off of her upcoming album that'll be released in late February, early March. So I did a little bit of writing and arranging on this. But as you'll be able to see in heavy metal, we actually took and rearranged a couple of old tunes that you might have heard in the past. But you'll be able to hear it.
All right. Now let me ask you: when it comes down to you writing a song for somebody, do you have to listen to, you know, how they sound, you know, what their format is, or do you just go by writing it and you automatically know who that song is going to?
Right, that's pretty much it. I mean, if I'm involved in the writing process, I'm actually already written it before I've even presented it to the artist, and I don't present it to the artist unless that particular artist comes my way. So if I wrote a song that's, you know, kind of neo-soulish, if you will, for lack of a better term, and I'm sitting here with a R&B pop singer, and it doesn't fit them, then I'm not going to show them this particular track. I'm going to write that track, put it down, and, put it in the bank. And then when a neo-soul artist or somebody who's going to be able to fit that particular vibe comes along, then I'll present that track to them, and, you know, along with the words and things of that nature.
All right. Let me ask you this. Which one would you say is more, in your heart? Would you say it's the music part or the songwriting part?
Definitely the music part. I think that I've learned so much from different musicians and different composers throughout my lifetime that I'm able to tell my story inside of that melody without even writing a word. So the words come afterwards, but in my heart of hearts, I know that I can tell you what feeling or what mood or what story I want to tell you by the keys that I strike on that keyboard.
Now, let me ask you. Which artist would you prefer if you had the chance to produce a track for, would you produce and why?
It'd be a few. But mainly, even though right now I lean so much towards hip hop and the music that I do, I would love an opportunity to do an album with either NDIRE or Erykah Badu. Those two artists embody, they have everything. They embody music to me. So along with their music, their melodies, there's always an element of hip hop and then their soulfulness inside of it. And they both bump. I mean, you know, they're still hip hop to me. Their foundation is hip hop to me, but it's music. You can dance to it. You can cry to it. You can get happy to it. I mean, for those that do, you can smoke to it. You can drink to it. They got it all for you, you know, and it doesn't have to, you know, crumble your speakers, you know, doing it. And, you know, they put out a good message, whether it's about partying, whether it's about sex, whether it's about whatever, you're going to be in tune to what they do because they just have a certain way of getting that across. I love that about those two. Love it.
Yeah. And I think Erykah Badu, she just got that.
smooth voice, that relaxing voice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
I love Erykah Badu's voice. She definitely got that relaxing voice. Now, let's talk about your single we're going to get into that you produced.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And,
all right.
Like Your Smile. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Like
Your Smile is actually done by an artist. Her name is Cynthia Yvonne. Like I said, she's a particularly new artist to the scene, and she's actually fused with a little bit of hip-hop, pop, and rock. And she's a very beautiful young lady, has a good voice. And this particular track, being that she does a lot of rock, type of stuff, or I would actually call it alternative to a certain degree, and you'll hear that on the second track. But this one kind of just, you know, I had the melody for a minute, actually a couple years, and like we was talking about before, I didn't present it to anybody until she came along, and I heard what she could do to it, so I presented it to her, and that's the feeling that we both came up with when we were sitting down trying to write and arrange this song, and it just came out. So that's more of the urban side. It has an original feel to it. It has an old school feel to it. A familiar feel. That's what I'm really looking for, a familiar feel to it. And that's what we went with.
Okay. Now, how did y'all meet up? Was it something that somebody introduced y'all to each other? Or you just heard her one day, or she just heard your tracks one day and was like,
it's crazy. And, I ain't going to say it's crazy, but actually I seen her or met her in a supermarket, and actually it wasn't even on something music. We were just kind of flirting with each other. And then, we started talking about music. And then once I heard that she could sing, the flirtation went away. And then I just listened to her sing, and I was like, oh, man, this is what it is. this is what it is. And it kind of popped up that way.
It gotta be business now, right?
I mean, hey, it is what it is. But you gotta make a stand. You gotta make a stand somewhere.
I ain't mad at you. Well, we gonna get into that single right now, all right?
All right, cool beans.
All right, Dons and Divas. This is Like Your Smile, produced by Ruben Rice. This is GQ Palace.
Love and entertainment.
It's butter, baby.
This is a GQ Palace exclusive.
Wow. You are now listening to another Rube Rice Two Nights Entertainment Productions, featuring the girl Cynthia Yvonne and my boy Blaze. Check it out.
Something about his you pass so we can get us acquainted. Hey, lady, I know you heard the stereotype, but I just wanna love you like the Mario type. I see you in your tight 17 and Chanel jewels, and your shoes seem to compliment your nails too. Eyes hazel, rings all in your navel. Guys always follow you around like they was paid to. And you far from a Saturday, love. How you turn from night to a matinee, love. Asking myself questions, are you one to invest in? Chilling on some drummer by the lake like it's Justin. And you never gotta worry about who go it is or who show it is. Guaranteed you notice this. If you thinking you needin' to know him, you needin' to know this, you needin' to know this.
Divas, phone lines are now open. The number to call, 646-200-3838. Press 1 to speak to Ruben Rice or stay on the line to hear the show. Ruben, I love that track.
Appreciate it, my brother. Appreciate
that track. That's definitely
it.
Two-step in the club. You can even grind
yeah.
the club on that joint right there.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
Even grind in the club on that joint right there. That's definitely fire.
I appreciate it.
And she's definitely doing her thing on it, too.
Okay.
So, you know, it ain't no lost on that. She's definitely doing
okay.
it. That collaboration is just brilliant. You know,
I appreciate it, man. We work hard on it.
Yeah, the way y'all collaborated on it is definitely crazy. How long did it actually take you to do that track?
That particular track, like I said, I had already built it actually a couple of years back, and I just had to refurbish it a little bit to bring it up to modern sounds. But to actually record, it actually took us a lot longer than I thought because in the middle, you know, you could hear some of those, that Tevin Campbell that we use in there to go to her bridge. Well, she's a rather young artist, so, you know, she didn't know it. So, you know, we had to go back and look at the old Tevin Campbell song and then come back and try to get her to do it, you know. So, you know, that was the hard part about it, you know. So,
it took like a couple of takes before.
It took a couple of days. It took a couple of days. Yeah, it took a couple of days. But you know, that's what we do. That's what we do. I'm an engineer and producer. That's what we do. We take the time to get done what we got to get done.
Yeah, but see, that's how it is. Patience is a virtue, and perfect make perfection, you know?
No doubt about it. No doubt about
it. Let's talk about your Two Nice Entertainment, your music production company.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, basically, it used to be, when I was a little younger in the game, it used to be set up as a record company. Actually got the LLC and everything with it. We actually had a president, a couple A&Rs, and we had a stable of artists. But as I grew and as other people grew, I kind of branched off, to make a long story short, into just a regular production company. I tried taking a few artists underneath my belt. It worked out to a certain degree, but I still wasn't comfortable with where I was and what was going on in music. So it eventually just branched off into a full production company where I'm actually a producer for hire. So everybody that you hear from me now, until I say so, is actually a client, so to speak. And I'm just helping them put their dreams and their artistry together, and I'm helping them put their vision together. And that's pretty much what I do now.
Okay, so let me ask you, is music And music is what you do, but is that the only, is it only R&B, or do you do like house, gospel, or you going all around? Is it just R&B and
yeah. Yeah, I do it all. Like I said, being from my background with gospel, and then coming up, you know, through a mature family, because I'm the youngest of five kids, and they're 7 years apart from me to the nearest child. So I kind of grew up in a mature atmosphere. So, you know, I got a whiff of jazz, R&B, and I was blessed to come up in a time where R&B was R&B, you know, with Freddie Jackson, Luther Vandross, Regina Bell, Whitney Houston, people like that. So I got a taste of what, quote unquote, you know, real music was. And so that enabled me to be able to transform all of that to what we have today, so I can be prepared to do jazz. I study Quincy Jones, so I can even do some big band stuff, you know, some Frank Sinatra stuff, along with some Jeezy, some Gucci, Lil Wayne, N.D.I.R.E., Donny Hathaway. So I kind of fuse everything that I have in me to go into whatever it is that I do. So I'm kind of like, you know, I would say like a baseball player, like I'm a batter. You know, a good hitter mm-hmm. is going to be able to hit any pitcher. You know, whether it's Satchel Paige, Sandy Koufax, Mike Bonica, Storm Davis, Andy Pettit. I'm sorry, and you know. If you're a good hitter, you're a good hitter. It doesn't matter what ballpark you're in. Doesn't matter which ball it is, what bat you use. If you can hit, you can hit. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
And you definitely hitting. You're hitting home runs.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it, man.
Home runs. We actually have a caller on the line for you. Caller, are you there?
Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you have Ruben Rice on the line, one of the biggest producers from Baltimore.
Yes, and I'm still jamming. Like your smile.
Oh, I appreciate that very much, very much.
He does have a wonderful voice, and the production is amazing.
Thank you.
Keep doing what you're
doing.
Say
that again.
I said, yeah, the production is amazing, and to keep doing what you're doing, you're definitely going to make it far, and I'm looking forward to hearing more from you in the future.
Oh, wow, I definitely appreciate that, and thank you for the words of encouragement.
You're welcome, anytime.
Wow, that's what it is.
Okay.
That's what it is.
You know what? Because I'm going to get into another one of your tracks. You
okay.
Produce, heavy metal.
Okay.
Right. Now, who came up with that title?
We had a collaboration to a certain degree with the there's a gentleman on the hook with her. And it actually started off to be his particular song, and he actually came up with the heavy metal part of it. And as we started doing it, I just started adding the elements that heavy metal would have in a particular song. And, you know, once again, you know, just people in the studio with a vision and everybody playing their role and everybody playing their part, we was able to come up with what we hope is going to be another good track for people to listen to.
Oh, all right. Well, what I want to do first, I want to play this heavy metal track first so that people can hear it, because we have a caller on the line for you. But I want that caller to just hold on, all right?
All right.
But first, I want to get into this track. I want them to hear, you know, exactly what you're working with, you know?
Cool, this was good.
All right. All right, Dons and Divas, here's some more fire produced by Ruben Rice. Title Heavy Metal. This is GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment. It's butter, baby.
Thank you.
good.
Love how y'all did that track, how y'all mixed in Ike and Tina with the Jeffersons.
That's what's up. I told you, man, we tried to use all the elements.
That is definitely creative. That's creativity.
I appreciate that.
We have
once again, I appreciate
it. For you.
Okay.
Carla, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you have
how you doing?
Nice on the line.
Hi, how are you?
I am so great.
That's good. First off, are you married or single?
Oh, God.
I'm married.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, I'm married.
That's the question. But
man, I'm
going to
get it when I walk in the house tonight.
No, it was just a question. I didn't say anything
cool
else.
Beans, cool beans. That's cool. That's
no,
cool. I ain't mad at
you. Is nice.
Thank
your
you.
Music
I appreciate
is very
it.
Nice, though, seriously.
Thank
yeah,
you.
And, you
thank
know,
you.
Keep up the good work and your producing and engineering and keep the man up above first.
Well, get on down.
Yeah.
That's what's good. I appreciate it. I appreciate that. Both things.
Okay.
Both things. You know,
okay.
Both things.
All right. Take care of yourself.
You have a good night.
You as well.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, Ruben, we're running out of time. But
it's
we
cool, man.
We're going to push you. But what I need you to do, I need them to give you your information and everything. You know, let them know. You know how they can get in contact with you. You know if you're on Reverb Nation, if your track's on Reverb Nation or Twitter or Facebook,
sure.
Give them all that information.
There's definitely only two ways to get in touch. Well, there's a lot of ways, but I'm still old school. I still have a studio number that you can just straight call me, and you know we can contact or conversate that way, which is very old school. But it's 443-454-6351. Once again, that's 443-454-6351. That's the studio number. So if I don't pick up, please leave a message, and I will definitely get back to you. And you can also find me on Facebook at Ruben Rice, however you do Facebook. What is it, like facebook.com/Ruben Rice. You can find me that way, or, you know, you could just go ahead and Google Ruben Rice or Two Nights Entertainment. You will be able to contact me or find me or check me out or whatever the case may be.
All right. Ruben, I'm trying to get you up, but I got callers calling in. And
that's what's up. That's what's
we
bad.
Have a caller on the line for you. Caller, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm married.
You on the line.
Oh.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay. I'm responding to that last caller, her first question.
Oh. And what was it about me being married?
Yes, yes. This is your wife. Yes, he is married.
All right, now. Hold it down.
That's not what we're here for. My husband is so talented. Rube Rice is so talented. His art is phenomenal. I've been a fan forever, and I'm going to continue to be a fan. And I suggest everybody that's listening to continue to support him, support his music, and utilize his skills.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Right.
Success.
That's the biggest
I'll see you later, sweetheart. All
right. All right. All right. We have
yeah,
another
you know,
caller
yeah.
on the line for you. Caller,
wow.
Are you there?
So, mother.
Yo.
Hello, caller, are you there?
Hello.
Yo, what's good? It's Baltimore Sun. I'm calling the show Rube some love.
Hey, what's up, my
right,
dude?
Right.
What's going on with you?
What's good, man?
Yeah, this
been
is
here listening to the interview. You know what I mean? That work, it was some good joints, man. You know, I got a lot of respect for you and everything that you do, and that's real love that your old lady could call in. I wish I'd get my wife to do it when I'm on some interview. I take my hat off to you for that, man. I wish I'd get her to even listen to that.
But you know, I try to do what I do when I can. You know how I go. You know how I go.
My man. But yeah, man. You know what I'm saying. I'm a fan, and I'll be checking in and look forward to working with you some more in the future, man.
Appreciate it, man. And I you.
Good, man, good.
All right. Ruben, is there any shout-outs you want to give?
Well, you didn't already hear from my wife, so definitely want to give a shout-out to her. Definitely give a shout out to the artists that you heard here tonight, Cynthia Yvonne, and my man Blizz. Hopefully, you know, we can get the things worked out that we need to get worked out so we can make this album a success. Definitely have to give a shout out to my boy Paul Johnson, Master Mix Incorporated, who mixes and masters every song that I put out. Definitely shout out to my boy D-More Son, D-More Rapper, the whole Baltimore scene, man. Baltimore is definitely on the come out, on the come up. They're doing some big things. Just stay tuned to the Baltimore Grind. Give a shout out to the young ladies in the studio at this particular moment. Triple Take. Yeah, so next time I come up on GQ Palace, we definitely we might have some Triple Take stuff for folks to listen to. And, you know, we're just going to keep on doing it. A big shout out to you, man, for y'all having me up on here, man. GQ Palace is definitely where it is, man. Definitely where it is.
All right, good looking. You know, you're welcome. Many times, dial that number and you're here.
That's what's good, man. I appreciate that.
All right, Ruben. Thanks a lot for your time and patience, man.
All right, man, you too, man. It was a great time. Appreciate it.
All right.
Cool.
All right, Dons and Divas, coming up next for the last segment of GQ Palace Radio, author K.L. Belvin is in the building, here to talk about one, that's right, one of his novels that's sweeping the nation, From Gigolo to Jesus. So stay right there and don't move. We'll be right back. This is GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment. It's butter, baby.
Still love me.
Dons and Divas. Welcome back to GQ Palace Radio. And with me right now, I have KL Belvin. KL, welcome to the show. KL, what's going on?
Oh, man, thanks for having me, man. Definitely. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you taking out the time. I know you're a busy man and everything. I really appreciate you taking out the time, you know, to join us tonight.
No problem. Listen, man, after the conversation we had yesterday, you know I wasn't going to miss it.
All right. Well, you know, let's get into that conversation because like they say, you learn something new every day, and I appreciate the conversation that I had with you and everything. I really do.
Definitely.
You know.
So wherever you want to start, brother, you tell me where you want to go.
Right.
We can take it there.
All right. Let's get into your book, From Gigolo to Jesus.
Yes.
Right.
New book, Gigolo to Jesus. It's a book about transformation, personal transformation. It's my memoir, and I know some people like to say that you can't write a memoir until, you know, late in life. But I feel when you got something to say or something that you believe is going to help someone, you need to get that out to the world. And I felt so strongly about what the Lord had did for me that I knew if I could get this down and get it out, it would help somebody else. And it was really the pushing of my wife who said, don't do anything else. Stop trying to put your hands on so many other things. Finish this first because it's that important to everything that you're trying to do. And as I have learned in this relationship that I have with my wife, I've learned to listen to her because she understands who I am, and that's what I did. So we sat down, we got it together, and we got it out to the world, and the responses have been great. And the responses from brothers and sisters have been tremendous because I put a lot of dirt on the table about myself. I put a lot out there for folks to truly understand how filthy I was as a man before I made this transition and what I'm trying to do since making the transition. And every day is one step at a time to try to be that man that I believe God designed me to be.
Oh, okay. Now, what you do in your book, of course, you got your own publishing company and everything going on, right? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Now, how long did it take you to start that publishing company to get that book out there?
Well, we started, my first book was called A Man in Transition, which was my poetic, it's a poetry book, but it was my way of putting myself out there, but in a poetic way. So my wife and I sat down and created the publishing company, but we really just with the intent of putting my own books out. So it was like, let's just self-publish my book because I kept hearing how you can't get a deal, you can't do this, you can't do that. And I hate being told what I can't do. So my wife and I sat down and said, well, let's just do it ourselves. So in 2008, I released A Man in Transition, went out there, and I just shopped it. I did the things I needed to do. I went out to different events. And I really sat down and tried to learn as much as I could. I feel I'm an educator, and so I felt that I should be able to teach myself to do something. And this way I would have complete control over my words, over my product. And if it sells, fine. If it doesn't, fine, but it's going to be my way. So in the next year and a half after that, of just going out, meeting different authors, meeting different people, going to different events, and really just going back to what I knew as a kid from the streets, is just how to go out there and sell myself, not sell the book, but just really get folks to understand who I was and what I was trying to do with the book so the focus wasn't on the poetry. Now, the poetry itself is solid. My words are solid, but people don't go out and buy poetry books. But people will support a brother who's moving progressively, who's trying to do some things. And once we got to 2010, I heard so many authors say, well, KL, how was you able to do this at such a cheaper price? How was you able to get this done? How come you didn't have to go this route? I said, well, I think I can put something together that's going to help authors do the things that they need to do to at least have a strong foundation for their book. So the only worry they have to have is getting out there to hustle. And so I created Braven Publishing. My wife and I created Braven Publishing in February of 2010 with the idea of giving authors a safe haven to be able to invest in themselves, to put out a quality, professionally done book. And now the only thing left for them to do is to get out here and grind, which is going to be part of the game, whether they go the traditional route or the self-publishing route. And that's how it really came about. We just felt like if we could put this out here and authors can feel comfortable with what we're giving them and we can supply the services that they need, now with the money that they save, they can put that into promotions and marketing and hopefully make something happen for themselves. And in this coming February, we'll make 2 years we've been in business, and I'm happy with the success of Braven Publishing.
Okay. Okay. Let me ask you. Now, you got your book published and everything. Now, your novel, From Gigolo to Jesus,
mm-hmm.
it's actually about a man, you know, dealing with a certain amount of women and everything, right? You know, and changed his life around.
A whole lot.
Yeah, he changed his life around. What made you call it From Gigolo to Jesus?
That's a great question, brother. The reason why we chose the title Gigolo to Jesus, again, I got to give the credit to my wife. And anybody listening to this interview, understand that I'm going to reference my wife a lot because she's everything to me. I'm nothing without God and my wife, so I just want to say that first. And I love my wife to death, and I wouldn't be the man I am if I didn't have her in my corner. So she pretty much came up with the overall idea, and then we shaped it together. Basically, the title From Gigolo to Jesus is this. A gigolo, we all know what a gigolo is. We know that a gigolo is a liar. We know that a gigolo is someone who gets paid for what he does. He's a person that goes out and he's all about the things that he's trying to do. Well, that's what I was. I was going to try to have sex any way that I could with whoever I could, if I could get money from you, if I could do some things, whatever. That's what I was. And the reason why we said to Jesus, I didn't become Jesus. Jesus is my focus. Jesus is what I push to get to and what I keep in front of me. And if you look at the cover of my book, it's a rearview mirror with the faded pictures of many women. Off to the right side of that, outside of that window, is like a faded picture of Jesus Christ, and on the highway it says Highway to Heaven. And the reason being is that's where I'm at. I'm on the route two or the road two. Hopefully, you get to where I can impress on God that I really made changes, because that's who this is all about. It's not about man being in love with the changes that I made. Is that I'm hoping that I can do enough that the Lord says, "Son, I like what you did. Come on in." And that's my push every day. And on the back cover of that same book is my wife and I, because I felt there was no way I was going to just put my picture and let it stand alone when my wife plays the role that she plays. So the title From Gigolo to Jesus is everything that encompasses who I am as a husband, as a man, and everything.
You know what, that I honor you on that, because not to bring it up, but my wife, I feel she's a very strong supporter towards me too. And
there you go.
Your wife also wrote an article in Ebony Magazine based on your relationship, which also speaks about your book, From Gigolo to Jesus, right?
Yes, yes. We're featured in this coming month, Ebony, right now, page 96.
Oh, okay. Now, with her doing that book, you know, did you complete that book by yourself, or did you, you know, have your wife put her input in it?
Oh, man. Nothing that I write, nothing that I put out to the world is not seen by my wife first. So when I completed From Gigolo to Jesus, my wife is there every step. So a lot of women, when we go out to speak and we do a lot of things, a lot of women go, "Girl, how was you able to deal with all the dirt that he put out there? Because I would have killed him." But that's part of why we actually go out and speak, to show folks the power of true marriage, to what a real marriage is that a real marriage can overcome anything that's put in the past, as long as the two individuals are working together and looking forward and trying to be positive. Plus, my wife wrote the foreword in my book because, again, I felt after looking around and seeing what professional, who can I get to write the foreword, you know, what can I do that's going to make the book sell, I stopped, I took a step back and said, you know what, I'm not going away from a formula that has worked this far in my life. The only person that I feel can write the foreword to my book is the person who is the strength behind who I am, and that's my wife. So when you look at the foreword, you'll see that it's her words explaining what her thoughts are in the book, and I actually didn't have no input in that. I told her to write whatever she wants to write to introduce my book, and her words came out very strong. And same thing in the Ebony article is that when she wrote the article, Ebony, of course, writes me to make sure that I'm okay with it, that we're actually together, that we're a real couple. They do their homework. And basically they said, "Do you have anything to offer, anything to add?" And I looked at it, I said, "No, I just gave like one or two points of my own personal feelings about what she wrote." But I was so blown away by what she wrote, because I hear it every day, we talk every day, but when I sat down and really read it, I looked at it and said, "Wow, honey, you know, we grew up reading Ebony, and now here we are in Ebony, and here you are writing about me, about my transition, but my book is about our transition, and then our company is listed." We really sat back and smiled and said, "The Lord is really making some moves for us, because everything that we are came through in that article."
Okay. And you know what I want to do right now?
Yes.
I want to play a poem that you actually dedicated to your wife. All
yes,
right?
From my first book.
I want to play that right now. So what we're going to do, we're going to listen to this poem real fast that you have dedicated to your wife. All right, Johns and Divas, phone lines are now open. The number to call, 646-200-3838. Listen closely, because this is a real author stating how he really feel about his wife. Y'all need to take heed and take lessons. This is GQ Palace, Love and Entertainment. It's butter, baby.
This is a GQ Palace exclusive.
Hey, how you doing? This is KL Belvin, and I want to read a piece that I dedicated to my wife, Tiffany. It's one of my favorites. It's in my book, A Man in Transition, and I just wanted to show the world what my wife means to me. It's called Perfect Woman, If Only in My Mind. I ask myself, why am I so lucky? Is there a reason I'm so blessed? But you're never supposed to question God's work. I say God, because how do you explain her patience with me? There is something about the way she understands my needs. Are there other women who would love another's children like her own? Would another woman be strong enough to trust God and take you back when you have tasted someone else's fruits? Her soul is pure enough to douse the evil that once filled my own. My vanity, pride, and smugness have been replaced with concerns, endearment, and gratefulness. I now focus on more than just my own needs. Her smile fills my heart with joy. Her tears burn up my soul and demand my immediate attention or screams for forgiveness. I am blessed with an equal. So again I ask, why am I so lucky? Does God see something in me I don't see? He must. She is sexy beyond belief, even when she sleeps. Can that comfortable look come from what I have brought to her life? The world is funny. One minute you're all alone, next thing all your dreams are being answered. Thank you, God. Well, the only course of action is to leave all my worries, fears, and concerns at the Lord's feet. Something about having the right woman makes each day, night, and morning special. I really do have the perfect woman, If Only in My Mind, by KL.
KL? That brought me chills.
Thank you, brother.
You know,
Thank you.
I mean, it's so deep. And, you know, I wish you and your wife so much more, many, many years together. God bless y'all. I really do mean that with all my heart. God bless y'all.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We definitely appreciate that.
We actually have a caller on the line for you. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you have author K.L. Belvin on the line.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
We don't even want to go there. But anyway, I just want to say your wife is the luckiest woman in the world. You are lucky. You're lucky. You know, and it's just a blessing. And the poem, I'm serious. Yeah, it did bring tears to my eyes. And I hope and pray one day that I have a man that I can feel, or he'll feel the same way about me. That was beautiful. And I'm like, Rich, I wish you and her all the luck and blessings in the world. I know y'all will be together forever. To death do you part, as
Thank
the saying goes.
And
just keep God first like you're doing, and I know he'll work it out.
Definitely. Thank you, sister. That's actually what we're trying to do. We do seminars on trying to get brothers and sisters to see marriage in a different way. My book is actually designed to try to help brothers to come home and fix the damage that they've done. And so putting out my own dirt, putting out everything that I was before I found the Lord, and then showing what the Lord has done once I've gotten all that off of me, is trying to get a lot of brothers to come home and repair that the waters are not as dirty as they think, and that there's nothing that they can't overcome. And so I don't see myself as anybody special, just trying to do and give back what the Lord has allowed me to be able to survive from, because it's all about him, because for the most part, I should be dead. I should have AIDS. I should have a whole lot of things, but I don't, and I didn't.
Because he wasn't ready for you to have that. Yeah,
there
I
you
mean,
go.
You know,
you
it's something else, and you giving other people blessings. With the seminars, do you have them on the phone or radio?
No, we're in the process of putting everything together. On our website, we have some of the videos that we're slowly putting everything together now. We have a radio show that's going to be back up in February. You come by the website, you'll be able to see and get all the information. What my wife and I are doing now is slowly building everything. Right now, everything is funneling through the books that I'm writing, because as we gain the capital that's needed, then we can put things in place. And so I'm not a person that's out beating folks over the head to buy the book, but I explain to them that as a professional and as an entrepreneur, I need your assistance in purchasing the book, telling friends and family to get the stuff, and then we can put the other things together. We do an internet radio station just like GQ, and so we're definitely going to support them, and hopefully we're going to be getting their support back, which I know we will. And so this part of the
book,
too, is the networking, the networking between brothers and sisters. We travel. My wife and I jump in our van, and Lord knows we slept many nights in our van because we just wasn't going to pay for a hotel because we didn't have the extra. And we'll work with any small church, mid-sized church. We'll work with anybody, depending on what your financial situation is, to come and speak. Because I'm also a teacher. I'm a 15-year educator, and I'm a mentor to young men in schools, and I'm having a big problem here in New York City. But every time I start these mentoring groups, the principals shut it down because they get nervous, because the young men listen to me. I'm very serious. The young men listen to me more than they listen to some of the principals, and they get nervous about that. And so I've been having problems trying to sustain these groups. And a lot of the videos are on my Facebook page. You can see the videos of our wedding. You can see the videos of the young men when I've given them books, a lot of things. And the biggest problem I'm having is that actually it's from brothers and sisters. They know the problems that our young folks have, but they don't want to support what I'm trying to do. And it's not a church thing. My wife and I finished the ministry of these books in our business. So, sister, just stay tuned. Everything that we're doing, support us by getting the word out there.
Most definitely. Rich, you can have him as a friend, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yes, of course. I got him as a friend. I'll link you up.
Okay. Okay.
But thank you so much. I appreciate
it's
you calling in.
To you and yours, you know, and keep up the good work, you and your wife.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. No problem.
We have another caller on the line for you, KL.
Appreciate it.
Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello.
We have KL, the author, on the line.
Hi, Mr. Belvin. It's Lavina.
Hey, how we doing? How's it going?
Good, good, good. I just want to say to hear two strong, powerful Black people doing it together, it's amazing. You definitely inspire me and my husband to be to overcome whatever obstacle comes in our way.
Thank you.
And
thank
you
so much.
You're welcome. You definitely have GQ Power support, and no matter what you do, I commend you. You definitely
thank
inspire
you so much.
Me. I'm looking
thank
forward
you.
To any and everything that you guys have coming up. GQ Power is there.
Thank you so much. You got me blushing, then, and Black people don't blush that much, but I'm blushing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, sister.
You're welcome.
KL, let me ask you, if I wanted to become an author and I was going to start and couldn't start my novel, what advice could you give me to succeed in writing like a good novel? You know, what could you inspire me with that should tell me to write something good?
Great question, and I get that a lot. So I would tell any author, first of all, settle down, sit down, and write the book. Stop worrying about what's going to happen when you're done. Stop worrying about marketing. Stop worrying about everything else. Write the book. Take an hour, 2 hours out. Give that book the life that you want it to have. Write from your heart. Don't worry about what's hot, what's whatever. Write from your heart. Make sure the story that you're trying to tell comes through the way that you want it. Then once it's done, then you go through the process. That's, you know, editing, that's design, everything. Then we do all of that. And you have to make the decision, is this project going to be one that you want to invest in? Or do you want to go out and see if you can get someone else to invest their time and money in? Because let's keep it very real. Once you write it, now it's a matter of the financial burden. It's either going to come from yourself, which means you'll reap more financial reward, or you're going to go out and hustle it and get someone to take it on, and you'll share in the reward, but at least you don't have to lay out the capital. at the beginning. So you really have to ask yourself those questions. But don't ask yourself those questions at the beginning. Get the book written first, because if you were to talk to someone and say, I'm working on a book, well, then everything is dead at that point because you don't have the book done. It's different when you say, I completed a manuscript or I have a book written. What can I do with it? Because now, let's say you can't afford the services that my wife and I provide, but there's someone out there who's maybe looking for authors. So if I was to refer you to somebody and you don't have a manuscript, well, then I'm looking foolish. But if your manuscript is done and I refer you to somebody who's looking to maybe sign authors, now they have something to read, they have something to give to their people to look over, and they may say, you know what, with a little work, this is something that we could do. Now you get a signed deal, you go from there. And also, you got to consider your hustle factor. I mean, let's keep it 100%. You know, if you're not ready to go out here and talk about what your book is going to do in this world, then just don't do it, because why waste anybody's time to put all this together and you don't want to leave your house to go sign a book? You don't want to hit the road and try to sell some books somewhere here. You don't want to do free events, because you're not going to get rich just because you wrote a book. There's 9 million books being written every day. So for your book to stand out, you have to make people feel you. I didn't say I was selling poetry. That, like I said earlier, I felt my poetry stood on its own, and as you hear from tonight, you can tell why. But I wasn't, in that poem right there, I explained to folks why. I don't care what the poetry show that I was doing was about. I was going to work in that poem about my wife. So it could be a show about cars, and I was going to say, well, I love my wife, and we got a car, so let me do this piece for her, and I'm going to squeeze that piece in because I felt so strongly about it, and I felt that it really exemplified what my book was about. So instead of harping on poetry itself, I harped on the man behind the poetry, myself. That's another thing I tell authors. Know how to be able to present your work to somebody that they sit back and go, I got to have that. I got to get that. I got to tell somebody about that. I mean, there's times when I'm at book events, I'm bouncing all over the place. My wife got to tell me to come back to the table to sign some books because I'm all over talking and joking and laughing. And sometimes I forget that I'm an author. I got to go back and sign the books and do the things I need to do. But that's how it has to flow from you. And people respond to that. People can tell when you're serious about your work, when your passion comes through. And our love is like that. And so when people see us together, they automatically see it and feel it. They want to support it. And then hence they purchase, you know, different things, and we love it. And we just hope that they put the word out and tell more folks.
Now, let me ask you about a quotation real fast, because we run out of time, and I got to have you back on, Bob. He said, the wife